aboard, you people. Starship Robot Show, off for another day, broadcast insolence and panic. I would say there might be a significant amount of that. Let's put it this way. Not an insignificant amount of that. Because, well, I've tried to remain calm, but I'm not going to lie to you. I did go out and get some provisions yesterday. I'm not kidding.
I can't believe you're even here.
I love that place.
No. Provisions. Just no prime. I went to I didn't even fully do it. I had my daughter do it. But they go out to the store and get water and cleaning supplies. And let me tell you something interesting. There was no Purell to be found. No Purell. Zero. She went to four stores. Zero Purell.
I was walking through our front lobby today here at 303 Wacker, and somebody walked in. I'm not even kidding. Walked up to the front desk and said, "Do you have any hand sanitizer here?" I don't know if that person works here or if they were just walking building to building looking for hand sanitizer.
Okay, so the guy at, I think it was Mariano's, said to her, he whispered to her, "There's a shipment coming in tomorrow. Get here at noon." And then I didn't say anything to you. And he walked away.
Opens a briefcase full of Purell.
Well, I mean, imagine what Purell's going for right now. I don't want to make light of this. I know there's a lot of panic. There's a lot of fear. There isn't a lot of panic yet, but there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of concern. I think that's the best word to describe this. But we don't laugh. I mean, listen, there's not much we can do about this. We can shelter in place, which I try to do as much as I possibly can. You can put a bag over your head, which I do as much as I possibly can. If I sort of built my own biohazard suit at home with some tarp and a rubber bands. And then some scissors where I cut holes in the bag, which was a bad idea because then it's going to get in through there, isn't it? It's a very tense moment, though, especially when Chicago seems to keep popping up in the news, right? It was the first case was here, and now we've got another case here, and it's up in Arlington Heights. And we asked the county health officials to join us and the city health officials to join us today. Just, you know, like 3-minute update, just letting the people know. They said no. Now, let's talk about that for a second. You don't get to say no if you're the county health director to a radio station that covers Chicago. I don't care who it is. Us, the Mix, if they want to do it, GCI, I don't care. Whoever has it, if that is their job. Their job is to administer it and to send somebody out. They got a PR person they pay money to. Have that person come out and explain what the position of the health department is. Where is it? What's happening? We need calming voices because I'm not one of them. Most clearly. So a memo to the county and city health departments. Make yourselves available to the media. Don't hide behind a presser that happens once a day for 5 minutes. Because that doesn't update, because this is a fluid situation, right? I mean, we're seeing every time you get another push notification on your phone, it's more people either dead or contracting it in the United States. So that, I think, needs to be, please, we're paying your salary. Do your job. Thank you. That was a public service announcement. All right, so Mr. Ben Bradley is going to join us here in just a few minutes. The Rokan Show also got results, I should say, from last week, which should tell the health department that they should get off their ass. But the charges have now been let here in the case of the stabbing death at Richard's Bar here in Chicago last week. We had the brother of the victim on last week, who was out talking to the media and pleading with anybody to get some sort of understanding from law enforcement here why it is that the guy that they caught who clearly was involved in a stabbing, an assault and a stabbing of his brother who died from his wounds, why he wasn't being charged. So we have We now have charges in that case. And I think that we can also, we can all take a little bit of credit, all the different media organizations. I like to take credit for myself, but I think, you know, I'm kidding there. All the other media organizations that are jumping in on this, and we're able to make this happen and let this guy tell his story about his lost brother, which is an unbelievably compelling story. It's up for podcast at WGNradio.com. I suggest you listen to it. It's absolutely amazingly brave of this young man to step up and tell his story in the way that he told it, just within days of losing his brother and watching his brother die in his arms and having to make a decision about whether his brother took his last breath in his arms or he got up and ran after the guy who'd stabbed him. He chose the latter and caught him. Police let him go over last weekend, and now they've decided that that was the wrong thing to do, and now they're charging him. And was the police let him go? The state's attorney let him go. There you go. Another example. But right now, let's check in with Kim Gordon. She's got the headlines.
Well, actually, don't you want me to do the weather?
Or the weather,
whatever. I can do a little bit of both.
Thank you.
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team weekdays, 4 to 10.
Ben Bradley joins us right now from the WGN-TV newsroom. A couple things before we get into the coronavirus craziness, because I know that you feel the same way I do about these kinds of things. But there has been a development in the Richards Bar stabbing where police we always say police charge. Police don't charge.
Prosecutors
have now charged, have sworn out a warrant for this guy's arrest. Do we know details about what that warrant is for?
We don't have a copy of the warrant, but we know that it's been a couple of days since that warrant's been out for the guy who stabbed to death a man at Richards Bar. It's been out a couple of days, and still no arrest has been made. The guy's not in custody, and as you've been reporting and done a good job of exposing, you know, it's this case where, there's a disagreement of some sort outside a bar. It escalates. This guy allegedly whipped out a box cutter and began stabbing Ken Paterimos, and then claimed self-defense, and somehow got off on that. We've actually reported over the years the difficulty that police and prosecutors have in bringing cases, typically where there's no witnesses, but one guy says, oh, it was self-defense. And if there's no one else to say it wasn't, prosecutors oftentimes will not bring the charge. In the case that we profiled, police said,
that's Kim Fox calling you right now to tell you to shut up.
Yeah.
Let's just pick it up, Ben. Just go ahead and pick it up.
No, because the call says it's from our assignment desk, which means it's a random viewer, no doubt, calling to yell and insult me.
Okay.
So I never pick those up.
All right.
But anyway.
Good to know.
No.
So, random caller, I hope you're listening to this right now, and you realize that you called and he didn't actually pick up.
Yes.
All right. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
But
so,
bottom line.
Yeah.
So, in the case we profiled, in this case is a little different, but, police said, no, we don't think this was self-defense, and we think, prosecutors, we've brought you enough evidence. Prosecutor said, no, we need more evidence to make a case. Police closed it as CCX, which is closed, cleared exceptionally, which means police think, hey, we've done all we could, and we're going to count it as a solve, even if prosecutors won't bring the charges. Now, in this particular case outside Richard's Bar, it seems like after – I'm going to just answer this. Hello, you're on the air.
It's going well, Ben.
Hi.
Is it your wife?
I got to call you back. Yeah, she wants a stick of butter and two things in
there. Yeah, all right.
We
should have something done about
this
that.
This isn't live, is it?
No.
Can we just
sure,
this
we'll
tape
just edit
again?
It out. Okay, go ahead. All right.
But bottom line, in the Richards Bar incident, you had witnesses who said this was not self-defense. They had the guy in custody and let him go. And now have decided, oh, wait, no, maybe we want to bring him back in. And so far, they haven't been able to find him.
Now, prosecutors have decided they want to bring him back in because they were holding him. The police are – let's explain how this works, because I think a lot of folks don't
understand
exactly
okay.
what this process
so
is.
So police go out and, we're going to kind of dumb this down here. But police respond to a crime. They talk to witnesses. They take somebody into custody. They interview that person. They get statements from that person. They get statements from witnesses. And then there's a felony review team. So they call up essentially a prosecutor from the state's attorney's office and say, okay, here's what we've got. We'd like this charge, felony murder or manslaughter, or whatever it is, and the prosecutor, whoever the team is on felony review, will say, you've got enough for the case, or no, we don't. What we've been hearing from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office is, and from police who deal with the State's Attorney's Office in general, is that in the last couple of years, the bar has been raised, that cases that would have resulted in charges before, now prosecutors are going back and say, no, I need more evidence. I need more. And that can be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your perspective. A good thing in that, prosecutors are making sure they have cases that they can actually win in court with solid evidence. Or it can be a bad thing from the police perspective, which says, look, I'm working with a community that may not want to talk to me. I may not have videotape. I may not have this. But, we think there's enough to make a case.
This is the problem. Because it's charges approved, charges not approved. Those are the two things that the state's attorney can say. They can say, okay, so when they presented attempted murder or in this either, there are varying degrees of murder and manslaughter.
Right.
Right? You can charge
based on
the state of Illinois. Right.
Yep.
So whatever it happened to be, maybe they just want to charge him with the manslaughter, then they take it in and they can up the charge. The state's attorney can always up the charges at some point.
Or sometimes they charge high, hoping that it'll...
Right. They throw the
coax somebody into
kitchen sink, right? Like the first degree murder, and then it work your way down, or however, whatever they classify it here. First degree murder is what you always see on cop shows, but they didn't, and they let the guy go, and now he's in the wind. And this guy had an incident at a bar a year prior, in which he pistol whipped somebody, and he was arrested for that and charged with that. Nothing ever happened to that, apparently. I mean, this is where we sit. And this isn't about criminal justice anymore. Kim Fox likes to talk about, this is about violent criminals. Well, what the hell was that? Right? If that's not a violent crime, and are they making the argument because there weren't eyeball witnesses and it's just circumstantial that the guy went outside with the other dude outside and he comes back in and he's slashed and then the bad guy runs away. The brother of the victim chases him down, tackles him, and they come up with the actual weapon. They come up with the weapon. Now, I know a lot of people at Richard's Bar didn't want to cooperate with this. I understand it's a dive bar. God knows what goes on there. People don't necessarily want to cooperate with police. You see this all over town. But this is, it's not open and shut, but it's certainly chargeable in my humble, not legal opinion. Just having watched this for 30 years, and I'm sorry, this is one of those situations where now all of a sudden they're like, I guess we can charge it.
Yeah.
And if this were not election year, and this were not a heater case, this would have not gotten charged.
And I hate to say it, but oftentimes media coverage and shining a light on it does make a difference.
Yeah.
And I know you said this just before I came on, but the victim's brother in this case, through his grief, through his pain, has pushed forward and kept the case in the spotlight. He talked with our Tanya Francisco today, so we'll have much more coming up at 4 o'clock. But not everybody has the ability, the skill set, the mental and emotional bandwidth after experiencing a trauma, the loss of a loved one, to then push forward to demand justice. The system is supposed to do that for them. They're supposed to be victim advocates,
right,
in the system.
We used to talk to our very dear friend Tom Skilling every day here on the program, and over the last number of months, he sensed that his health had been deteriorating, and he cut back on some of his duties, including the stuff that was not directly related to doing the newscasts, and that was including our show. And he was, and part of the struggle, his health struggle, has been with his weight. And then he announced on Facebook late last week that he's going to be off the air now 4 to 6 weeks to get gastric bypass, and I just want to acknowledge that and wish him the best.
And he was he's in great spirits about it. He's, I think, as anyone would be, a little nervous about undergoing a significant procedure, but he's been very open in the newsroom about talking about it, and I think he realizes that he's tried a number of things to lose weight over the years and thinks that this is the best option. And, I give him so much credit for sharing his own experience with the public, because Tom, Roe, don't take this the wrong way, but there are a lot of people in our business who what you see on TV is not what you get in real life. Tom Skilling is what you see is what you get. And he was worried that viewers would worry about him. And they would. Yeah, you should see, the guy takes more than a couple days off. People start calling our assignment desk, worried about him.
And he
maybe that's what that phone call was that kept interrupting us.
And he was very upset when he would have to take extended periods of time off. So we just wish him the best. And I know it's a difficult time for he and his loved ones, and I just want to, our thoughts are with them, and we certainly will do whatever we can for them, whatever it happens to be.
I'll look forward to passing that on, and I cannot wait to see what he asks you to,
you deliver. Never know. You never know. I could always go to Walgreens. Well, I can't really go to Walgreens. I send everybody else now, apparently. All right.
Because if there's one thing I know I want, one person I know I don't want at my side during any type of medical crisis, it's Rokan.
Yeah, that's really true. All right. So, but I do have, as I pointed out, I've got a lot of supplies now. I've got cases of water. I've got the
bubble,
the cleaning sheets, whatever those things are called, the Clorox.
Yeah. I remember wipes. A couple of years ago, you were you had some sort of ailment, and you were doing the radio show from the bunker of your home because you didn't want to even be exposed to anything by leaving. So I know you've moved since, but I trust you still have some sort of bomb shelter.
I had the flu. That was years ago. I had the flu, I was working both at Fox 32 and at WLS, and I did both shows from my bunker.
I remember that.
So I remember for days, and that was during the big snowstorm of 2011 or whatever that year was. So that was that was a lot of fun. That worked out, but. But I had the flu. Yeah. I mean, don't you think that that's reasonable? If I had the flu, I should stay home.
I appreciated it. I just thought I loved that you had a contingency plan in place for long stretches.
But do have a studio at my current home, which is used to do a lot of other production stuff. But it is available between 3 and 7 every day in case. And I said this to the station. I go, if you got to lock everybody down, I may be the only person on the air.
Exactly.
Right.
You'll keep
unless Surratt wants to go stay in the bedroom. I don't know what's going to happen there.
You'll keep on broadcasting. Coronavirus. Interesting. I was at my kid's soccer game this weekend, and there were a couple of parents who mentioned that they had been stocking up on supplies. And I thought, we always struggle with, okay, we want to report it. We want to get out the best information. Now there's a third and fourth person who have tested positive here in Illinois for it. But we don't want to panic people. And it's interesting that folks have been worried enough, not about necessarily getting the coronavirus, but just, I may need to stay home for a couple of days and may need to batten down the hatches a little bit.
Well, it's a little too early to batten down the hatches because I think that the battening down of the hatches is a week to 10 days out. Is this thing, if it spreads, let's assume that it will.
Yeah, and these third and fourth patients, Governor Pritzker and the head of the Illinois Department of Health just did a news conference, and interestingly, they did not reveal where this husband and wife, where they think they contracted the coronavirus. But the wife is in good enough shape that she's being treated at home, in self-quarantine at home. The husband's hospitalized. Both are in their 70s.
I will say this. I'd made a terrible mistake. And late Friday night into early Saturday morning, I watched Contagion.
Oh, my God.
That was a terrible mistake. Do not watch that movie now.
That's like being an alcoholic and walking into a bar.
That's when I decided that all of the supplies had to be picked up right at that very moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, not by me.
Well, I was just saying, as your friend, I'm like, well, I could go to Rose House if, really things really went south. But I fully acknowledge you would not open the door.
No. No.
Fact,
I'm getting a Rottweiler just for this. All right, Ben. Thank you very much.
Yep.
We'll see you on the WGN TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10. Kim Gordon's got the WGN radio news right now. Okay. Did you hear in the news the story from ABC News from our friend Alex Stone, the Stone Pony, as he's known, that the state of Washington is buying a motel to house those in quarantine? I cannot imagine a worse situation. Your mind's eye, you could see the motel that they're buying, can't you? It's like, like the Bates Motel. It's like, all on one level. With the car, you park it right in front of your room.
Cigarette stains on the couch.
Yeah, on the couch. What couch? Stains on the sheets and on the blanket.
They haven't updated wallpaper or comforters or any kind of style since the 1970s.
The smell of must. You pull the sheets back, and then there's very mysterious-looking stains in the center of the bed.
Classic coronavirus crisis.
Alex Stone, I need to ask you some questions here because you just did the report.
Okay.
What kind of motel are they buying?
You know, I really don't know, but it's a motel that they were working on buying, and they were in the early stages of making the deal for the homeless, so that gives you some indication of what kind of motel it probably was. But for the homeless in the Seattle area, now they are kicking the homeless to the curb and saying, no, this is going to be for quarantine patients. And so, yeah, they're doing that. They've also got some prefab buildings that they were also going to use for the homeless, so they're going to use those too. That, I mean, they've got so many folks now in King County and in Snohomish County that are sick, and they're seeing the numbers going up really by the hour, that they've decided they've got to do something. China built those hospitals in like 10 days.
Yeah.
Well, Seattle says they can't do that, but they do have this motel location, and now they're gonna buy it and turn it into a quarantine area.
Oh God. I mean, this is not a solution. First of all, in all those, when you see the Chinese photos or video that's coming out of there with the hospitals that they built, you don't need to build a full structure. You could do these tent things, which people have been, you know, they've been doing for years and years and years in circumstances like this. You know, you have them in war zones and mobile surgical hospitals and things like that. You can set those things up in centralized areas. So
sure.
I don't know. Do you need to buy a motel? And then what do they do with the motel after it's been the coronavirus motel? And I'm going to tell you.
Then I think that
it's going to ruin your brand.
Going to be they sanitize it and then they use it for the homeless as they were planning to do.
Oh,
but
God.
They say this is going to house over 100 people once they've got everything ready to go. That they say this is moving to a new stage of the fight and that they feel like they've got to do it that they don't have right now. That they can't fill up the hospitals as they've been doing, that they've got enough patients in King and Snohomish County that they've gone to random hospitals around town. Some of the hospitals have the capability to isolate, some don't. That they believe that this will be a way to handle that in that county. Now, other areas, Santa Clara County in California, which also has a number of community spread cases, they're not going down this road yet. But in King County, they say it's time, and they're going to put them all into a motel.
Okay. So when you said the cases are going up exponentially here, what do you mean? Are these cases or people who've had contact with people who are sick?
Yeah, no, these are unfortunately cases that in the last 3 days or so that the numbers have been going up. It is now, as of this hour, and it changed a couple hours ago, 6 dead in Washington State. That's mainly all in King County. One is in Snohomish County.
Those are both Seattle. Right, those are both the Seattle counties.
In the Seattle area.
Yeah.
Those are all coronavirus patients. Most are elderly. One was 50 years old, but all had underlying health conditions. We know that is who is most impacted by this. And the other numbers have been going up as they've been able to test people. And that's really the thing here, is that now in these communities, whether it be there or Santa Clara County, which announced they have a few more cases today, they had more yesterday, the day before, that they believe now the coronavirus, COVID-19, has been in these communities, but they haven't been able to test for them until now, in that before they had to send everything to Atlanta, and it was only if the patient had been traveling or been around a known coronavirus patient who had been traveling. If you just had a fever and a cough, then they would say, well, that was the cold or the flu, or they couldn't figure it out, but you probably have the cold, you're going to be fine. Now, they are able to begin testing. Right now, they're doing the most serious cases. Then they'll begin to go down from there because the states have that test, and they're finding out these people they thought had the cold or flu actually have coronavirus. So there's a belief that maybe for the last 6 months or 6 weeks or 2 months that coronavirus has been in the U.S. and spreading in the U.S. We just haven't known it.
Because it's got almost the exact same symptoms as the flu.
Yeah.
Fever, and, trouble breathing.
If you don't do a test, you don't know necessarily what it is. And now they're beginning to really uncover that. Again, though, even those who are in King County and Snohomish, they're being told your risk is low. It's going up in those counties. They say it is increasing, but risk is low. But if you're outside of King County, Snohomish, Santa Clara County, Oregon, where they've had a couple of cases as well. They just announced a new one about an hour ago. And then now on the East Coast, Rhode Island, New York, and Florida, that you really have no reason to worry. But there are new cases, and they're dealing with it by the hour.
Alex Stone, ABC News. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, bro.
Kim Gordon's got the headlines. All right, Dr. Jim Adams, our chief medical correspondent or analyst or whatever it is. I'm too freaked out, Jim, to be able to come up with your title.
Don't worry.
Okay, yeah. You're very calming. Now, a couple of weeks, we started talking about this about a month ago when you were with us, Dr. Jim Adams from Northwestern Medicine. And this is, you know, at the beginning, I think I said, you know, how panicked were you at the beginning when, like, maybe 3 weeks ago when we started to see these cases really starting to percolate in China, not here in the United States yet. And mm-hmm. You said you were at about a 4. Where would you be today?
So honestly, what we're experiencing now is not surprising. I think everybody predicted it. We do have to be thoughtful, but not worried, not panicked, no undue stress about this, but practice good hygiene so that the virus doesn't introduce or spread in the community.
There has been a run on hand sanitizer. You cannot find Purell in this town. Store after store after store after store. The shelves are basically empty. If you find them in a store, you got to buy it. It's a crazy situation. Obviously, is that helpful?
It is. It's a healthy thing. It's a good thing. Decontaminating hands and surfaces. But washing the hands with soap and water is better. Wash the hands with soap and water, 20, 30 seconds, way better.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about where this is now. An interesting story. We were just talking with our ABC News correspondent on the West Coast, and the city of Seattle is buying a motel in which they are going to place some of the people who are suffering from the coronavirus who need to be quarantined. This, you know, it's like out of a movie a little bit here. But what health officials up there, because they seem to be the most stricken area in the United States so far, they seem to believe that the coronavirus may have been floating around and confused with the seasonal flu by healthcare workers because they weren't testing necessarily for it for the last 4-6 weeks.
Right. So they got surprised. They've had 14 cases and 5 deaths, but really from a concentrated area, especially that nursing center. So they're worried it might be circulating. Now, fortunately, Chicago's in a different situation. We're the first test to be able to do the testing. The State Department of Health is out doing testing. So they're already looking for it in our community. And unfortunately, it looks like Washington State got behind somehow.
Now, if you go to the store and you want to buy like Lysol wipes or, like I said, Purell, things like that, is there something you're looking for specifically on the label? Because some of them say that because they have a list of different bacteria and viruses that they are capable of handling. Like, it says 99.9%, but then there's, you know, 0.1% that one should be concerned about. Is coronavirus, when they say coronaviruses, are they talking about this one as well? Is it any coronavirus?
Well, obviously, these haven't been tested with this coronavirus, but it looks like it's a coronavirus that's familiar and would be killed by those antiseptics. So that's what I use. That's what I have. And also bleach and alcohol. It'll kill it. Really good hygiene. And just don't cough and sneeze on other people and cover the mouth and stay away. Stay home if you're sick. If we just stay home for sick, really good coverage, covering your face if there's coughing, sneezing, and then washing the hands and surfaces, we'll be really okay. Look at Singapore. Look at these other countries that have good hygiene. They're minimally affected, and they're much closer to China with a lot more people having come in the country. So we really can do this, Chicago, Illinois. We can really do this, and people should not panic. Basic good hygiene. And yes, there's going to be some spread, but I think this is going to be well controlled.
And let's talk a little bit about the medical preparation here, like they've had on the Northwest Coast. If we were to have more of an outbreak here, the major hospitals are well prepared for this?
So there's a good density of healthcare in Illinois. The major hospitals are preparing from beginning to end across the possibilities. really, really concentrating, though, on keeping sick people at home. If you're sick, you don't really need to see the doctor if you feel okay and it's just a cold. So stay home if you're sick. But also, if things escalate, we're prepared as well.
Okay. And one last thing for you. This run on masks, what is your thought on that?
Yeah, I wear a mask really to protect the patient. I don't really wear a mask to protect myself. I'm okay with people wearing masks. That way they don't cough or sneeze on me. But it really doesn't protect me that much if other people are sneezing or coughing.
Now, why is that the case?
Well, because if they're sneezing or coughing, when I inhale from the mask, I'm still inhaling from the side of the mask, and it's getting in my eyes. So it's still not really protecting me that much. It's to protect the droplets from getting out, not the virus from getting in. So distance, hygiene, washing hands, much safer than the masks. Masks are fine to wear if you want to, but not a necessity. Hand washing is a necessity, and surface decontamination is a necessity.
All right, and let's just go quickly through the symptom situation here. If you start to encounter these symptoms, should you attempt to get medical intervention here? So what would it be?
Well, if you can't breathe, if you're having trouble breathing, if you're so sick that you can't get up out of bed, you're too tired with a high fever, then you should need to call your doctor or come to emergency. But if you have a cold, if you're coughing and sneezing, do not worry. Just stay at home. Wash your hands at home.
If you're moving around, if you're able to get out of bed.
Yeah, if you're eating, drinking, moving around, you'll get better. And people know. People have good judgment.
Yes, right. I mean, you know when you're super sick.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the flu. But, again, this could be a confusion with the flu, could it not?
Oh, yeah, it could be. But the people who are really getting harmed by this coronavirus, this COVID-19, are really 70s and 80s. They have a lot of complicated medical conditions. It's no surprise that it's been out of this nursing facility. They're the people who are most at risk.
All right. Okay. Well, you're making me feel better. So are you still at a 4, would you say, in terms of your alarmed status?
Yeah, I'm not that. I mean, I would expect spread. You know, we've had 18,000 deaths in the United States from influenza, 310,000 cases of influenza. And so in the whole world, you know, there's been 3,000 deaths of coronavirus so far. But in just the United States, we had 18,000 deaths from influenza. So I'm concerned about both of them, but there's no alarm whatsoever. Good hygiene will help both influenza and this new COVID-19.
I will make this point, though. In Iran, they're seeing a death rate of what they're calling is 5.5%, even though they probably have not diagnosed all the people who've gotten sick with this. That's 5.5% of the people who presented with it, and they've been able to diagnose. But now you're seeing video, because there is a theory in the Iranian media and in the Iranian public that their government is lying to them about it, and they're trying to control them through the fear of the coronavirus. And it has gotten so out of hand there that there are people who are actually going to religious sites and licking the religious sites to prove that they are not. I mean, there's video that's it's unbelievable that trying to prove that they don't believe what the government is telling them. And obviously, you know, this is a global thing, but this is what happens when you have siloed media and you don't really get information from outside. But this is I think the bigger fear here is less the disease or the condition here, and it is the potential for panic.
That's absolutely right. These seem like boring things to wash the hands or cover up your nose really good if you're sneezing, coughing, or stay home when you're sick. Seems like boring things. Really does make a difference for flu. Really does make a difference for COVID-19. Really does protect people that you could contaminate that are seriously ill and could get a serious illness with it. But it really does work, and we've seen it work in other cities around the world. So I know that we can do it here, but it's absolutely no reason for panic.
Dr. Jim Adams, Chief Medical Editor of The Rokan Show, unpaid position. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
Thanks.
It as always. All right. From Northwestern Medicine. They're our partners in all of this, so we thank him for being there. All right, well, that makes me feel a little bit better. Seems like he's not quite as panicked as I know that I am. It was the run on the Purell that really got me. The lack of Purell. Now I'm going through my house looking to see if I've stashed Purell anywhere. And, you know, you would think I would have, but I just can't seem to find it. I should look in luggage. I think it's going to be my next look, because I tend to take it with me when I go on vacation.
We have some in the newsroom if you want it.
You do?
Yep. It's
how much for
it's
it?
Germex. It's not actually Purell. Germex.
Does Germex actually have a list of things that it covers? I hope it does. All right. Thank you, Kevin Powell. We've got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And Kim Gordon coming your way in 2 minutes.
For Chicago's most accurate forecast, join me, Demetrius Ivory, and the WGN Weather Team around the clock on AM 720 and at WGNRadio.com.
WGN Radio Chicago.
Brocon Show, 720 WGN, reminding you that, you know, we did a little trick. We did something that maybe we shouldn't have done. We were a little naughty. We sent a cameo request to Rod Blagojevich. Now, what does that mean? There's a website, Cameo, where celebrities or infamous people, and I think that that sort of qualifies for Blago, get to charge you to read personalized messages for you. So you send a script. This is what you want the person to say. And then they say it. And then they send it to you, and they charge you, some people charge you $15 or $30, depending on the level of the celebrity, and then it goes all the way up to hundreds or thousands of dollars in some cases. And Blago was at about $100 for his, at this point. He started it, I think it was like at $45, and then he worked his way up from within the first couple of hours. It's sort of a supply and demand situation. So the more they come in, the more you can charge. And he did. He got up to $100, and they split that in some way with I'm on Cameo, but I do it just for a charity. And I charge an exorbitant amount for it. So no one uses me. And that's okay. But if they do, then the money goes directly to the Police Memorial Foundation. So that's how I do it. Blago doesn't have those kinds of restrictions. So Blago received a script from us that was, I think you probably thought was pretty benign until we got a hold of it. Here's the original.
Hi, this is Rod Blagojevich, and this message is for Jeff. Hey, Jeff, I hope things are getting better in Illinois. I'm not sure. I just got back. I know I missed your birthday last month. Happy belated birthday. Brian evidently may have missed your birthday as well, and he is deeply sorry. He wanted me to tell you that he feels awful about it, and he'll make it up to you one day. The last thing I'd like to say to you, Jeff, is good luck to you, and all the best.
So, we decided that that's not sufficient for us. We want an apology from Rod Blagojevich, and we're going to get an apology from Rod Blagojevich, even if we have to re-edit his words.
And now this special cameo message from former Governor Rod Blagojevich.
Hi, this is Rod Blagojevich, and this message is for Illinois. I just got back, and I know that I'm deeply sorry. I feel awful about it, and I hope to make it up to you one day. Good luck to you, and all the best.
Here's our apology. We finally got it. People of Illinois, you've been waiting for an apology, and it took the Rocon Show and Rocon Mighty Art Players and Cameo to get you your apology. Well, finally, my friends, you have it. It's very unfulfilling in a lot of ways. Kim Gordon's got the weather right now.
For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Now, Tom's going to be off a couple of weeks, as we know, as he attends to his health, and we wish him the best. We're thinking about you, Tom. Okay, Philip Bump is joining us right now from the Washington Post. And I don't know, Philip, if you've noticed, but over the last 6 hours, the Democratic field for Super Tuesday, which is tomorrow, has thinned out considerably, has it not?
It has, in fact. I would say basically since Saturday morning, the entire nature of the Democratic primary has changed pretty dramatically in a way that's sort of interesting to watch.
Yeah. So just in the last couple of hours, you had Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar Pete Buttigieg got out last night, but they both have now decided, she got out this morning, decided that they are going to endorse Joe Biden and potentially appear, I know that she is, I don't know about Buttigieg, appear at a rally for him in Texas?
Yes, reports indicate that both of them will be at this rally for Biden in Texas. Texas is one of the two largest states that's voting tomorrow, the largest being California. And clearly this is something that Biden, he's trying to ride this success that he had in South Carolina, where he won by an overwhelming margin, much more, I think, than people expected. He's trying to build on that energy. It's pretty clear that his success in South Carolina, in fact, actually helped get Klobuchar and Buttigieg both to drop out of the race and decide to stand with him. It sort of sets up this fascinating dynamic now where not only is it primarily Joe Biden against Bernie Sanders, but then we also still have this wild card of Michael Bloomberg, who spent $500 million of his own money and is running very hard in Super Tuesday states. And so it's this, you know, for the next 48 hours or so, we're going to have this really odd tension between those three primary candidates.
Well, help me understand this, Philip, because if let's assume that Joe Biden, they split it between Biden and Bernie Sanders, and they each get, there's 1,300 delegates up, and let's say they each get 600, and then the Bloomberg gets 100, because they do this by percentage, right? They apportion the delegates in the Democratic Party.
Right.
Okay, so or whatever it happens to be, whatever the mix is, it's pretty clear that if Mayor Bloomberg, who has spent like $400 million on television and TV ads for the last couple of months trying to win this thing, if he doesn't get it, he's got to get out. And, you know, his delegates, he would assign his delegates to Biden, right? He's not going to go with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, presumably. I mean, well, I think one of the things that the candidates are going to be doing here is over time sort of withholding their pledges. You know, Buttigieg and Klobuchar endorsing Biden does have some meaning in the, in the context of where the delegates go. I think Bloomberg will probably hold his a little closer to his chest simply because clearly he jumped into this thing to try and be a power player. But yes, it is the case that Bloomberg's delegates probably would end up voting for Biden at some point in time. But the key thing here is that if both of them get that many delegates, if the split is really, you know, 550, 600 between Biden and Sanders, it really makes it very difficult for one of them to reach the majority of delegates needed before the convention in order to prevent there being what's called a brokered convention, meaning that there actually it does come down to a vote on the floor and people sort of doing that horse trading of delegates. You know, once we're talking about a third of the delegates being allocated tomorrow, so if a sixth of them go to two different candidates, that means that, you know, the pool of remaining delegates that could be sorted out between them is perhaps too small for us to be able to have one candidate hit that majority mark.
Right. Okay. Before the convention.
But before the convention. That's
it, it seems to me that with the bloodletting that there has already been, or there seemed to be bloodletting. I guess, let me go back to, you know what, Philip, let me rearrange my question for you. Because
sure.
I'm so surprised that in the last week we went from Biden's dead, oh my God, it's going to be Bernie Sanders, to, oh, Biden's alive and he's going to win the whole thing. He's going to walk away with it and everybody's getting out of his way. And it seems to have just happened based on the fact that in South Carolina, a relatively small state, in a state that he was anticipated to win in, he won by such a large margin that now all of a sudden that momentum out of that one state, and it's a peculiar state in terms of its electorate, in terms of Democratic electorate, let's say, because it's primarily African-American Democrats, and it was the surge of their voting for Biden that certainly helped. I mean, he's associated with Barack Obama, and he's associated with being a friend of the African-American community, and that helps. On Super Tuesday, the dynamics are going to be a little different, but people want to go with a winner, and it just seemed to have turned on a dime. Am I crazy?
You're not crazy. I mean, I think that sort of what happened is, yes, you're absolutely right, that if you had asked anyone at the end of December who's going to win South Carolina, everyone would have said Biden by a wide margin, right? So he basically did what he was expected to have done 4 months ago. The difference is that in between, three things happened. He did not do well in Iowa. He did absolutely horrendously in New Hampshire, which is not a state where he necessarily should have done horrendously in. And then Mike Bloomberg got into the race and participated in the debate, right? So Bloomberg gets into the race after New Hampshire. All of a sudden, his numbers start to go up pretty quickly. He's dumping a ton of money into advertising as part of it, but also because people are like, oh my God, Joe Biden's a total disaster. We can't have him be the nominee. Where else are we going to go? Look, here's this Bloomberg guy who's willing to spend, you know, billions of his own dollars. Maybe we'll give him a look. Then he gets on the debate stage in Nevada and does absolutely horribly. I mean, it's one of the worst debate performances probably in American history.
Yeah.
And comes out of that, and what do we see? We see Biden's numbers start to spike in South Carolina. I mean, a really dramatic turnaround. They just start to shoot straight up in the air. And so Biden comes into South Carolina. Everyone's kind of like, Biden's kind of weak. He doesn't look very good. At the same time, like, Bloomberg's a mess. Like, what are we going to do? We need to stop. You know, Sanders is on the rise. We got to block him somehow. Suddenly, out of the blue, Biden delivers this performance that, yes, there are a lot of reasons why he did that well, and he was expected to do that well, but he still did it, right? And so people are like, oh, my God, thank God Joe Biden can actually win a race. Now's the time. We got to coalesce around him before. We got to coalesce around someone before Super Tuesday to stand in Bernie Sanders' path. And Biden is the natural choice to do that. That's sort of what happened over the course of the last 2 weeks.
It is amazing that in the Democratic Party, as you're watching this whole thing develop, and we're 2 weeks away from our primary here in Illinois, which is not so super duper, but kind of important Tuesday, I think is what they're calling it, because there's a lot of delegates up that day as well, and not just in Illinois. But there is this sense now that going into this week, it was like, oh my God, the entire future of the Democratic Party and America rides on this, because the Democratic Party is as divided as Republicans and Democrats are from each other. I mean, it's that crazy. So now you see the people coalescing, Democrats coalescing here. And by the time they get to Illinois in 2 weeks, will this still be an issue?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, I think that the question mark, there are two question marks. The first is, does Bloomberg decide, you know what, maybe it's not worth all my money to try and win this primary, and instead redirects all of his energy to attacking Trump? He's pledged to continue to pour money into this thing through Election Day, mostly attacking Trump. So we'll see, you know, what if the sort of nature of his advocacy shifts over that period. The other question is Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren, at this point, is playing the role for Bernie Sanders that Bloomberg is for Biden. I mean, Bloomberg's votes, as you said, probably would go to Biden if he were in the race. Warren's votes, many of them, not necessarily all of them, but a lot of them would go to Sanders. I mean, that's a pool of voters that he would have if Warren weren't in the race. And so she's actually helping Biden to some extent by staying in the race. Is she still in the race at that point? That's another question mark. And there's a lot of pressure on her already from Sanders folks to get out. But I think that the underlying dynamic, Sanders versus Biden, that's going to continue, you know, at least until May, unless Sanders somehow pulls away or Biden somehow pulls away. Remember, in 2008, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama went down to the wire. In 2016, Sanders stayed in all the way to the convention, even though he had obviously lost by March. He still stayed in and contested all those primaries. So there is a lot of recent precedent for this being two people heading all the way down to the convention.
Yeah. So Democrats showing up with Joe Biden against Donald Trump, you know, have a chance. Bernie Sanders against Donald Trump. And Donald Trump knew it. Right. He was asking, he's been asking at his rallies for people to come out and vote for Bernie Sanders, to give his people, the Republicans, to come out and vote, or his followers, they're not all Republicans, but to go out and vote for Bernie Sanders. They wanted him. They wanted to dirty up Joe Biden in the fall, into the winter. And that was certainly succeeded, I think, but it hasn't succeeded enough to keep Joe Biden not from now becoming, just in a day, from becoming the favorite in the race for the Democrats. It'll be interesting to see if the Democratic Party can unify and how much the president's campaign, reelection campaign, turns their attentions back on Hunter Biden and all the, you know, the Ukrainian thing. You anticipate that's going to happen, Philip Bump of The Washington Post?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, we've already seen there was a something filed today by Senator, I don't remember, it might have been Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who wanted to draw attention to this Hunter Biden thing. I will say, I'm not sure I would say Biden's a front runner at this point. I think Sanders is still the front runner. I think he's going to have a very good day tomorrow, you know, just based in large part on inertia. But it's absolutely the case that that both President Trump wants Sanders to be his opponent. He's extremely transparent about it. He just, you know, tweeted something about how this is a coup against Sanders. Like, I mean, it's sort of it's sort of humorous the extent to which, like, no one should be fooled by what he's trying to do with this. But it is absolutely the case, too, that he and his allies are going to once again turn their attention to Biden and do their best. You know, I mean, part of it is, you know, this is politics.
Right.
His impeachment is predicated, of course, on his taking it a step further. I think we're going to see other steps further as things move forward as well.
All right. Philip Bump, Washington Post. Thank you very much, as always.
You bet. Thanks.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Although, you know, Sleepy Joe, as the president likes to call him, is not exactly, I think, in the debate space, the perfect rival for him. I kind of wanted to see, of all people, I really wanted to see Pete Buttigieg in the debate space, because Pete Buttigieg is so incredibly articulate. And he's capable of making an argument, and he stays calm during it. Biden gets easily confused. But then the president also has the word salad. So let's just assume it's going to be Trump and Biden as we head into the fall of 2016 still sticks out in my head. The fall of 2020. Imagine that. And imagine the lack of complete sentences that we are going to have to endure as Americans for the 3-month run-up to the election. Here's Joe Biden from just today.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by go, you know the thing.
Our Lord and Savior, the thing.
So we got that to look forward to. Although I will say this, that it is at least a better debate than whether we want the policies as put in place by the Trump administration, as we've evidenced for the last 4 years, 3 years, or Bernie Sanders. You know, and that is a non-winner for Democrats and certainly for moderates. But again, this could be entertaining.
Look, tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday, and I want to thank you all.
Superstar Tuesday.
I think it was because it's Super Thursday. I think let me play that again. I think that's where it was going.
Look, tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday, and I
want to. Oh my god. You know what? He's not going to have a vice presidential candidate. He's going to have a day nurse with him at all times. The debates are going to be spectacular. If you had asked me 6 months ago who I thought was going to be the Democrat nominee, I would have told you Joe Biden, no question about it. And then I think, like a lot of people watching this thing, they're like, wow, Bernie's really got a lot of energy. That's crazy. And I kept thinking, why does Bernie have this energy? I know that that there are some people who are crossing over and voting because they want to vote for him, but that's just not going to be enough. And I know there are not enough of the Bernie bros that actually know where the polling place is. They love going to the rallies. They love talking about him. They love getting on social media about him. But actually showing up at the polling place is the commitment that a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters have failed to do. So we'll just have to see how it goes. But I look forward to this 2020. Let's check in now. Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. It's 4:30. Rokan Show on 720 WGN. All right. Oh, boy. We got Blackhawks tickets to give away. You know what? Let me give those away right now. And then I want to play some audio. Since we're a little bit of a sports moment here on the Rokan Show. Does anybody mind as we head toward 5 o'clock? 312-981-7200 is our phone number. 19th caller rips us off for tickets to see the Hawks take on the Blues on Sunday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Blackhawks tickets from our friends at Four Seasons. Okay, so the XFL. We're all familiar with this. I turned on the TV over the weekend, and on the guide, it says XFL games on all the networks that would have NFL.
And you're a huge fan of it.
Which freaks me out. So, you know, I pop it on. I was working on the Best Movies podcast that Richard Roper and I are doing. Got a new series coming out this week. And I pop it up on a screen while I'm doing the podcast. And I don't understand what I'm looking at. Because, again, it's like high school football stadiums that they're playing in that nobody is in, and very colorful uniforms. These are the two things I have noticed. and a lack of skill. It's like when you see that Shrine game, like the East-West Shrine game at the end of the college football season, and it's not really a bowl, but what is it? And then this guy's showing off, but we don't really know who they are. And every once in a while, there's a name that's like, oh, that's kind of familiar. I don't know who that is. Well, trending on social media today is our old friend Mark Trestman. Remember, he was the Bears head coach. He was an accountant and a lawyer. Trained as an accountant and a lawyer, decided he wanted to go into football coaching. And he ended up becoming an assistant coach in the NFL. Then he went up and as a head coach in the Canadian Football League. Not terribly successful as an NFL guy. He had a lot of success in the CFL. Comes down here. He's with the Bears. And the one thing we noticed the first time we met Mark Trestman is he was low energy. Lower energy than Jeb Bush. Just low energy. And I thought, is this the corporate CEO head coach? Is this what we need? Is this what we want? But, you know, this is a town that loves Ditka, right? In Quenville. We want guys with mustaches and they're angry and they're burly. That's what we like in this town. Trestman is not that guy. So trending are Mark Trestman's less than exciting locker room speeches. This is because everybody's mic'd up in the XFL. All the coaches, the players, there's a camera like on their helmets. I mean, they're trying to make this different so that people will watch it. The quality of football really does suck. So here is Mark Trestman from a halftime locker room speech. And this is a couple weeks ago. This started trending on social media.
And we got to keep our poise, right? This is an opportunity. Let's look around and let's find out who we are. Let's find out what we're all about. There's a lot of game left. Let's stay together. Let's get things cleaned up at halftime. And let's go out there. Offense, we start. Offense starts. Let's go to work. Defense, get ready. Go get that quarterback and keep playing the deep ball.
I just ran through a brick wall.
All right. I dare either of you to tell me what the mascot is for the Tampa Bay XFL franchise.
Aren't they the Vipers?
Lauren, would you concur?
I have no idea.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And that is correct. They are the Vipers. Tampa Bay Vipers. Well, Tampa Bay Vipers, after week four of the XFL season, had their first victory yesterday. So Mark Trestman, former Chicago Bears coach, and I'm not even sure we can call him that, he got really excited after the first victory.
I love you guys. I'm really proud of this team. You can be whatever you want to be, right? You guys can be whatever you want to be. We can be whatever. We get a choice. And I want you to have fun tonight. Enjoy this locker room. Enjoy the joy of a winning locker room because there's nothing like it in sports but a winning locker room in football. So I want you to go out and enjoy that.
Oh, yay. I'm so excited.
I just ran through a second brick wall.
We should really enjoy this. You know, there's nothing you can't be except NFL players. Oh, man.
There's only one thing more exciting, the birth of your first child, and you'll love it so much.
You know, Mark Trestman was calling plays the first week, and after week one, he relinquished those duties of play calling and gave them to somebody else. Gives you an idea of how bad he is at calling plays.
They were all runs up the middle with their fullback?
Not good. They knocked off the Defenders, though, yesterday. I'm a lifelong Defenders fan, as you know.
Yeah. Who are they from?
The DC Defenders.
DC Defenders, yeah.
Lifelong fan over here, so that was a tough one to watch.
I thought that was a TV show.
What is it, the Defenders? What color is their uniform?
Red and white.
Oh.
Yeah.
He actually does seem to know.
I know. I'm actually very impressed.
You guys don't watch the XFL?
Oh, God, no.
I have the thing. I wasn't able to.
The football is pretty bad, but it's football, so it's better than most.
But they play it in a tiny little stadium.
Not really. I mean, some of them do. It looks better when they play them in the smaller stadium, but like in New York, they're playing at MetLife, which is a massive, so it looks horrible. Because if you sell 20,000 seats, there's nobody in there. But some of them, they play in soccer stadiums. It just looks better visually on TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's bad football, but it's football, so I'm in.
Okay. All right, if you say so. Right now, Kim Gordon's got the weather. Okay, now. I have a question for you at 312-981-7200. We've got news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming away at the top of the hour. This piece of paper tells me to tell you that. Okay, here's my question. Have you been going out and trying to find coronavirus panic supplies? because I started that this weekend. Technically, I didn't start it. Technically, I sent my daughter and son-in-law out to do it, but I sent them out to, I called a family meeting. We sat down. I told them, here's what we need. We need water. We need Band-Aids. I'm not even sure what we need Band-Aids for. So they went out. We needed some food supply. And we just in case, I didn't want to panic them, even though I was shaking when I was telling them this. I didn't want to panic them, but I was thinking, yeah, just in, it's not so much the virus itself as the there may be some shutdowns of things. In other countries, they've done that. Now, the United States is far better prepared than most of these other nations have been because we are the ones who put out the scary movies like Contagion and Outbreak and movies like this. So we're 12 Monkeys. We're familiar with this kind of a situation, at least from the movies. So we know what to do. You know, you got tent cities and you got people in the full hazmat suits. And we're better. We're more organized in the United States than most other countries are. Right? We got that system where your phone goes off and tells you what's happening. You got the emergency broadcast system, which annoys you at least once a week here on this program. So I believe that it's not so much the virus, but there will be at some point the potential for store shelves to be empty, for stores to be closed, for people to be told they got to stay inside, which I don't even know how that's exactly going to work because you can't shut down these entire economies, but you can see it happening. They're trying that right now. And up in Seattle, they've got a community there that they're trying to keep everybody inside. They're trying to move. They're buying a motel to try to move people into that are quarantined. They're sick with this or quarantined into a motel to be treated. I mean, so there's some wacky things that can happen here. So as I sent my pilot fish out to go get supplies, here's the one thing that they noticed. No Purell. Zero Purell available. They found water. They found rubber gloves. I don't know what I'm going to do with rubber gloves, but we got rubber gloves. They found no masks. Although, were there masks at the Jewel? I mean, I don't recall that ever. But if you go to like Walgreens or you go to CVS, they don't have it. They're out because they generally had those things. I had them get me diapers just in case too, because you never know. What if the water goes completely out? You might have to have diapers.
I built a shelter underground in my backyard this weekend. That's what I did over the last 2 days.
That's where we need that backhoe that we advertised during the Hawks games. We had that guy to come over, start digging holes around our houses. I really did this, though. I mean, I really did send them out and with a list of things that we should have in the compound so that we're ready in case, you know, something should occur. And I'm just wondering if other people did, too.
Is anyone else not worried at all about this like me?
Me.
312-981-7200. Are you worried like me or are you not worried like the kids?
Youthful ignorance. We'll roll with that. You're the smart one.
I think that's what it is. It's like, even if it were around here, I think I'd be relatively healthy.
That's very confident of you.
I could survive it, I think.
That's very confident. Yes, in general, the people who have been felled by this are older, which includes me. I mean, you've had a number of people in their 50s die from this thing. So that gets my attention.
Yeah, if I heard millennials were going down.
Yeah, right. If all of a sudden you heard 29-year-olds were dropping,
what?
You'd be like, what? I just turned 30. Right? And you're like, oh, no, it's no big deal. It's like the flu, which it can be like the flu, unless you have an underlying situation, and you may not even know if you have an underlying situation until it's too late.
I might have it.
I've been sick for 10 days. And I don't know if I'm supposed to stay here or not stay here. I don't know. I'm just doing it anyway.
I mean, people are worried about it. My sister's work completely shut down all international travel. They have business all throughout the world, and they're sending nobody out of the country. And they said even if people don't want to fly locally, they can cancel any trips they've had scheduled.
That's interesting.
Yeah. They're allowing people to stay at home if they want. So this particular company is very worried about it.
Now, this particular company doesn't seem particularly worried about it at the moment. Although they don't encourage us to travel internationally here. I've heard that, by the way, because there is the I don't want to get into the businesses specifically here because everybody would get mad at me, but I have family in the restaurant industry and with that has a large chain of restaurants, and they're going into a very special protocol at these restaurants.
What's the protocol?
Where they're wiping down tables after every, like, with antibacterial stuff. It's not just a guy comes by with a rag, you know, which I never like that anyway. When a guy comes to the table, like,
sometimes looks like a dirty rag.
Right. You sit in a diner and then there you sit down because you want the seat before anybody else gets a seat, and you're sitting in a booth and there's crumbs everywhere. And then a guy shows up who's, you know, moderately interested in English, and he's got the rag there, and you can kind of smell the rag, and you're like, oh, I don't know. Is it clean? That's close enough. They're not doing that anymore. They have a very specific product that they're using, and they're going through this, and every surface has to be cleaned every 30 minutes or when a client or customer, I guess, moves through.
Can you guys lift your plates? I know you're halfway through your meal, but we need to get a quick wipe down in.
Excuse me, ma'am. Can you provide your hands for me? I just need to wash these for you.
Carl, you're on WGN, 312-981-7200. Go ahead, Carl.
So, yeah, I'm a registered nurse. I work in a critical care environment, and I can tell you that right now one of our concerns is that we've seen an uptick in pneumonia and people with respiratory failure based on viral illness here recently. And the thing that kind of concerns us is that a lot of the people that are coming in sick, and there has been a huge or a large uptick. I've been in that environment for at least 5 years now. And the concern that we have is that they're not even screening people. And I predict that if they did, the numbers will probably be a lot more prevalent than yeah. the, you know, people are hearing on the news. There's one or two or five or six. I feel like it's going to be a lot larger than that by the time if they ever do actually screen it. And right now, they're simply not.
Well, that's what they're saying in the Northwest Coast up in Seattle. They are saying that they believe that this virus has been in the environment for 2 months, and that many of the cases that are presented that weren't tested for in hospitals or doctor's offices with high fever, respiratory difficulty or failure, that those may have been coronavirus. But now they're looking at, now just within the last 2 weeks, they're looking at anybody who actually passes away from that, and they're testing. Right. And they're or the people who are super sick with it, they're able to get the tests out because really the tests weren't available until the last couple of weeks because they had to develop a test for this particular virus. And then they're doing a test. You'll understand more of this than I certainly will, Carl. There's a test for a coronavirus, which could be a lot of different things here. Right. There's four major strains of a coronavirus. And there's a test for a specific type of strain of a coronavirus, which not necessarily COVID-19, but it would be in that family, and that's what they're assuming here. That's why one of the cases here in Illinois was considered to be a presumptive test because they needed to send that sample to Atlanta for the CDC to confirm.
Yeah, well, I can just say from a lot of my colleagues' perspectives, we look at when people are in unusual age brackets and they're going into respiratory failure. You know, some of them, a lot of them are going to have the pre-existing conditions, COPD, et cetera. But our concern is, yeah, we're exposed to this. And then you get colleagues that are getting sick and having these symptoms that last for a month. And you're just wondering, you know, since we're not testing it for it, how do we know, how do we distinguish who's being admitted for, let's say, a influenza A, influenza B, or is it actually a coronavirus? Now, I know they will sometimes screen for the flu, but not always. And so, right. And if they're not testing these folks, how do you know how many are actually out there? I have a feeling, like, again, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a lot larger than what people think. It's not five or six cases. There's probably thousands.
So, Carl, what you're saying is you're seeing younger people showing up with respiratory problems that would be unusual.
Yes. Yes, yes. This, and I've been in that environment now 5 years. And this year, I know the flu's been kind of tough this year, but yeah, I'm seeing more, and they're in their 50s. So,
wow.
Yeah, we pay attention to it, especially in this environment right now. It's something that you go, you know, and then you do kind of worry because they're not they're not screening for it. So how will you know? So I have a feeling when it's all said and done, the numbers will be larger than five or six. If they tested five or six, I would expect they'll probably be hundreds.
Carl, thank you very much. Thank you for what you do,
too.
All right, I got to do this very quickly. Bill, you're on WGN. You got about 10 seconds to tell me this.
I was just going to let you know that I'm supposed to attend the houseware show at McCormick Place, and we just got notified it's been canceled.
And when was that scheduled for?
The 14th through the 16th of March, and that's a huge show.
Gigantic show. All right. Well,
yeah,
was it confirmed by a legitimate source?
Yes, it absolutely was. And I've also had some other customers that had like national sales meetings and this week that they just canceled their. So
got it. Thank you very much, Bill. We're going to double check that and check it on the other side. Here is the one thing you need to know at 5 o'clock. We have got a state response to the coronavirus. Here is Governor J.B. Pritzker.
I want to be clear that the best thing that the general public can do at this time is to continue taking the same precautions you take during flu season with renewed vigilance. Take extra care to wash your hands. Stay home if you are sick. Cover your mouth and nose during any coughs or sneezes. Clean often touched objects and surfaces frequently. And please visit a doctor if you are experiencing any symptoms.
Now, he had a press conference today in which he announced that there is a fourth coronavirus confirmation here, or presumptive confirmation, in the state of Illinois. And he says that this virus does not discriminate.
What's more, I want to emphasize that this virus isn't specific to any one ethnicity, nationality, or population. Just today, I joined Representative Ma and Senator Munoz to dine and shop at local businesses in Chinatown. Over the past few weeks, misinformation has caused business and foot traffic to drop significantly. And that's bad news for the restaurant and shop owners and everyone that they employ. So please join me in enjoying all that the neighborhood has to offer.
That is amazing to me. By the way, this is not just happening in Chinatown here. It's happening in Chinatown in San Francisco and in New York and in Toronto and places that have really big Chinatown areas and experiences. And Chicago is a really fun Chinatown. I mean, it is. There are amazing restaurants. You can get anything that is, you get stuff that is really authentic, current Chinese food. You get the American Chinese food. There's incredibly great Korean food there. There's sushi bars. And there's the Thai ice cream, which if you have not had that, you got to check that out. That is an amazing product. People should go. This has nothing to do with China. The people who are there are in the United States. They are, most of them are from the United States. So don't be freaked out by the Chinatown. And the other thing, how about the Corona beer? Now, Corona has already had to clap back, as it was said today in the press, against people who are saying that the Corona beer has something to do with the coronavirus. And basically, they're saying, how stupid could you be? Corona beer is not the least expensive beer out there. It's just funny to me that people would stop drinking it because that's what it is. I would think it would be sort of more fun to drink the Corona beer because you're saying the word so many times.
Go to Chinatown and order a Corona with your meal.
You can. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I don't know if
you
can do it.
Qingdao, or however you pronounce that. You go with that one. I like that beer. It's sort of ricey tasting. All right, now, how about this moment? In San Antonio, Texas, the mayor had to come out and give a brief statement because they accidentally let a coronavirus victim out of the quarantine.
As mayor of this city, I find it totally unacceptable that CDC would release a patient prior to receiving all test results and potentially expose the public to this harm. Local health professionals in whom I have the utmost confidence are working very hard to prevent the spread of this virus here in San Antonio, and we simply cannot have a screw-up like this from our federal partners.
Now, The issue here is that this person was released to a mall, and she spent 2 hours in the mall at the food court. See, now that's like out of those movies. It's like every one of those virus movies. That's how it is. And then she coughs, and then you see the particles like going out in the air. It's like the end of what is the Contagion. Yes, the end of Contagion, which I saw on Friday night. It was such a stupid thing for me to do. Before I went to sleep, I just popped it on while I was in bed. This was dumb. Do not do this. Because at the end of the movie, I had to sit through the entire movie. And the end of the movie is it shows exactly how Gwyneth Paltrow got it in the first place. And she was patient zero in the United States. She came, she flew back to Chicago, and then she got off the plane, and she had sex with her boyfriend, and then she was married to Matt Damon, and then everybody died except for Matt Damon. That's the movie you need to
know. I hadn't seen it. Gosh.
Yeah, what the hell, bro? Watch it.
All right, here is the weather, the sports, and the traffic. Kim?
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN TV.
He's working today, but starting tomorrow, he's going to be gone for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, we might need to update those reads.
Yeah, you might want to just choose the other one. Isn't there an alternative?
That was a solo one. I had to do that one.
All right. Let's let them know at Channel 9. And Tom is, we should point out, Tom, for those who don't know, is taking 4 weeks off to undergo gastric bypass surgery. And it was really compelling and sweet and sort of bittersweet. Facebook post that he put up on his page that in which he described his struggle with weight throughout the last number of years. And he talked about the fact that he got to a point where he realized that diet and exercise alone wasn't going to do it. Remember, a couple of years ago, he did a special at Channel 9 about trying to lose weight. And he went through this stuff and he started to lose actual weight and he started to look healthier, and it just overtook him again. And there is a point at which this almost becomes the only option out. And it's not a cosmetic thing. It's a life thing. I know people who have done it. Our dear friend Paul Bryan did this a number of years ago. Of course, you know him from, he's the Drive Chicago guy, and was for many years, and now he's got, he's big on the internet, where he's driving fancy cars. And he went from, I remember doing the auto show with him 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and he had to take a golf cart around because he used to run the Chicago Auto Show because he was so heavy. And he went in for the gastric bypass, and he looks like James Bond now, or James Bond's uncle, maybe, sort of white-haired uncle. So and he's healthy. I mean, he's going to live longer. So we wish Tom all the best in that. People are texting about, this is a great text, about the movie Contagion, which I mentioned right before we took the break, which I watched over the weekend. Stupid, I'm telling you. If you have coronavirus fears, this is the wrong film to see. But it's the top trending film in America right now. And it's free on, if you've got Xfinity, I think it might be on Netflix also. It's, you know, there are movies that just sit out there and they're on a bunch of the different platforms. So I'm trying to go to sleep Friday night, and I'm like, well, that's what I'll do. I'll watch this. And I had dinner with my daughter. We were talking about, you know, the best Outbreak movies. And that one everybody loves, Contagion. Outbreak is good. 12 Monkeys is good. But Contagion is shot here in Chicago. Some of it takes place in Chicago. Some of it takes place in Minneapolis. But it was all here. So there are Chicago actors in it. And there's a lot of places that you'll recognize that are in Chicago. So it's the one that kind of brings you back into it. It's Steven Soderbergh, the great director who did it. And I will say, that when you are done with it, you will not sleep. Because it's got a lot of reminiscence. Because they explain the contagion. And it's exactly the same thing we're talking about in Wuhan. It's a bat and a pig. And at the end of the movie, they show you the exact route by which the bat and the pig interacted, and then the bat and the pig, sort of how the pig ended up being sold into like this fancy restaurant at a casino in Macau, and the chef was making it, and the chef was, you know, just using his hands. And then Gwyneth Paltrow comes back into the kitchen to meet the chef because she's some sort of like a consultant or, you know, like a person, like a big business person who travels overseas for these kinds of things. And she was consulting the casino and she meets the chef and she shakes hands with the chef. And then she goes out and she has a drink at the bar. And then she gives the guy her credit card with her hand that she hadn't washed after she had shaking the hand of the chef who touched the pig. And the next thing you know, she goes to the tables and she's got the chips and she's throwing the chips around and the whole thing is happening. And then the next thing, then she's taking a selfie with a guy and then it's boom, 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 boom. Everybody drops dead. Then she comes back to Chicago and she gets off the plane in Chicago. She's trying to go to Minneapolis to go see her family, but she stops for a hookup with a guy in Chicago. That guy's dead. Then she goes to Minneapolis and then she's got the kids and then there's everybody's dead. Like, except for Matt Damon.
Had a good run.
I'm telling you, you watch this thing. You kids are not freaked out about this. I get it. I'm glad you're not freaked out. I don't want to contribute to a panic here. I'm just saying.
You're not at all.
I'm just saying there are things you should and should not do here. I think you should wash your hands. I think you should try to get Purell, even though you can't find it anywhere in the stores. Although I was told that a shipment was arriving today.
So we shouldn't fly to O'Hare and stop in Chicago for a quick hookup.
Yes. Don't go from Hong Kong to O'Hare, stop off and have sex with your ex-boyfriend.
Also canceling all my scheduled meet and greets with chefs.
Yes. Well, with chefs that are holding onto a pig.
Which is probably a fair amount.
From the Wuhan province.
There's a sick congressman from Illinois in D.C. He was in Chicago over the holiday. They're using the pod to fly him home. Then they're closing down Midway and O'Hare. The governor there is calling out the National Guard. They're setting up roadblocks. They're shutting down the Board of Trade, public transportation. Even the Teamsters are pulling their drivers off the road.
People are still going to slip through, you know.
Yes, they will. The Secret Service is moving the president underground.
I got to watch this tonight.
That's what's his name from?
Walter White.
Yeah, Walter White.
Bryan Cranston.
Thank you. How about that? Yeah. Now, that's a movie. That's a movie. But I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. You watch this movie and you're like, holy, oh no. And so much of it, right? Like you just heard there. So much of it that takes place here. Yes, it's sort of centered here. And they're trying to figure out what to do. And the guy from the CDC, his girlfriend is here. And he's like, honey, don't take a plane. Get in your car and drive to Atlanta. And don't stop anywhere, even for gas. And wash your hands.
Well, it'll be fine. I'm not even worried at all. Although Arlington Heights is my neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
Up in Arlington Heights, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
We'll survive.
Okay, I'm just trying to be clear here. I'm not, it's going to be, this is not the same in the movie Contagion. That thing killed everybody.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, this thing.
Everyone's dead.
This thing is not the same kind of a virus. This thing is a flu that has a big flu-like disease that has a big impact on the lungs. And if you have lungs you have COPD or other underlying things, heart disease, if your pulmonary system isn't working particularly well, you are at risk for severe illness or death. That's the point. Younger folks, there haven't been a number of younger, healthy folks that have been felled by this. So that's important to note so far. Again, the disease in Contagion is a little different.
I'm picking up a 12-pack of Corona tonight. I'm ordering Chinese food, yep. And I'm putting on Contagion.
You should go to the Chinese restaurant to pick up the food. Now, don't go into the kitchen and shake the guy's hand if it was touching a pig. I don't know that. I think that's just good. That's just a good idea anyway. Because they had the little baby pig, and the guy was holding a little dead baby pig that they were about to butcher up in Contagion, the movie Contagion. Just that last scene.
I'm going to get orange chicken.
Okay, there you go. All right. That's just fine. You know what? I want to mention this, too, before we break down for the news at the bottom of the hour here. James Lipton died. Inside the Actor's Studio. Did you ever watch Inside the Actor's Studio? Inside the Actor's Studio was the weirdest show on television. They would have these amazing actors. They would show up. And they would sit there, and James Lipton would sit at a desk. And then you'd have, like, Robert De Niro sitting in a chair in front of 30 students. And they would ask a question of him.
So tell me, what was it like to be in Casino?
That's what James Lipton would say. And he had like all these, like a stack of questions.
And then there was Taxi Driver.
And then the actor would just talk about it. And then the students would ask questions. It was fascinating, actually, because, you know, when you watch actors, you don't, hopefully you don't see them acting. Sometimes you do see them just reciting lines. There's a few actors that come to mind when you think of that. But the great actors, he would have on and explain how they get into their character and how they, the research that they do. And it was a really interesting television show. So here's James Lipton describing the fact that he never thought this was going to be anything.
You know what it is? The thing that impresses me about it, not me, obviously, but I'm not impressive, but the fact is impressive. It is nothing more nor less, and never has been and never will be anything more nor less than a master class of the Actors Studio Drama School of Pace University. Those are master's degree candidates out there learning the craft of acting, writing, and directing. That's what it's all about. Yeah. And imagine that we would have come to this. 14 Emmy nominations, which is also a record. The thing is that we... It's a class, and that is supposed to be anathema in television, and here we are.
He's the Mr. Rogers of movies, is who he was. He'd, like, invite you in to his classroom, and then all of a sudden, you know,
and now Al Pacino. And then there was Godfather 2. Please explain.
Here he is with Robert Downey Jr. I think this is after Robert Downey Jr. got clean.
How did your Ally McBeal career end?
Poorly, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
With so much at stake,
mm-hmm.
is the addiction so powerful that it will overcome the most fundamental common sense?
You need a dictionary to watch it because his vocabulary, like the extent of it, like what is that?
I know, it was amazing because he was like, he was big words. He was Mr. Rogers with a big word vocabulary. And there was no speedy delivery. He'd ask these people, and it would be the biggest stars. He was really something. All right, James Lipton has passed away. He was 93 years old. Coming up on the other side, we'll play this again for you. Played a little earlier in the program. We tricked Blago. You know, Blago's on that Cameo service on the World Wide Web. It's an app that people can get. You can order celebrities to do personalized messages for birthdays or saying anything they want. As long as you pay the dollar amount and they agree to it, they'll say anything that you send them. And Blago charges $100 for these things. He just got on this last week. So we sent Blago a script request and he did it. And we'll tell you how it went coming up after the news with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, the Rokan Show Mighty Art Players played a little bit of a trick on the former governor of the state of Illinois. You might have heard of this Robert Blagojevich guy, Rod Blagojevich. Robert is his brother. Rod Blagojevich, who was the governor of the state of Illinois, and he went to prison for could have been the rest of his life, but he didn't because the president gave him a commutation. And even though he was scheduled to serve 14 years in federal prison for, among other things, he was convicted of, and then they took some of this off the books during the appeal of trying to sell the Senate seat of Barack Obama when he became president of the United States. But really the bigger charges, that was the one that was most famous, but on appeal, it was ruled that was log rolling, but I don't even know what that means, log rolling, but the judge did not reverse his sentence. As a matter of fact, in the ruling, the judge wrote that he could have been sentenced to 60 years. So this panel was not going to reduce his sentence. So this is a pretty significant. The bigger issue was that he had shaken down a hospital executive, a children's hospital executive, saying that the Medicaid payments coming from the state of Illinois weren't going to get paid unless there was a $50,000 fundraiser for them and things along that line. And the feds had a lot of tapes and there was a lot of stuff. And then Rob Blagojevich gets out a couple weeks ago, comes to Chicago, and then makes a big speech about how he has been the victim of James Comey and of who had nothing to do with it. James Comey wasn't even in the FBI at the time or in the Justice Department at the time of the Blago thing. He was in private practice. And Mueller, who was then the head of the FBI, and he's sort of playing into the whole fever dream that you often hear about hoaxes and corruption and the FBI being bad and dirty cops and all that. And Blagojevich decided, instead of coming out and going, listen, I did the wrong thing, I mean, because we heard the tapes, I did the wrong thing, I'm sorry to the people of the state of Illinois, let's start over again, which would have been the appropriate thing to do. He's doubling down, and he's going down that road that is well-worn now in American politics and now in Illinois politics. It's all the bad guys in the FBI. It's the dirty cops, and it's prosecutorial, and it's Hillary, and it's this, and it's that. It's kind of disappointing. So I think I would give Rod Blagojevich the advice that he's a very smart guy. He's very capable of weaving a story, and he's found and he's emotional when he talks. An apology would be good from him, but he's chosen not to give us one. So when he joined Cameo, which is a website that you out there, everybody else can hire a celebrity to leave a 30-second, 45-second message for you, a video message. Maybe it's happy birthday to grandma. Maybe it's you're having an anniversary or you want to punk your friends with somebody. And there's a lot of thousands of celebrities on Cameo, and you can get them to do it pretty much for any dollar amount.
You got porn stars on there.
Yep. You got everything you need. Whatever you need. Stormy Daniels on there?
Probably.
She was.
Yeah.
So we decided, since we never got a proper apology from Rob Blagojevich, we were going to send a Cameo request to him. And we did last week, and we paid the $100 for him to. So we paid 100 smackaroos for him to leave a message. Now, here's the message that we wrote for him, because we knew he wasn't going to apologize.
Hi, this is Rob Blagojevich, and this message is for Jeff. Hey, Jeff, I hope things are getting better in Illinois. I'm not sure. I just got back. I know I missed your birthday last month. Happy belated birthday. Brian evidently may have missed your birthday as well, and he is deeply sorry. He wanted me to tell you that he feels awful about it, and he'll make it up to you one day. The last thing I'd like to say to you, Jeff, is good luck to you, and all the best.
Okay, that's Blago from his library in his home. He's got a lot of books. So we decided, after this is very scientific, what Jeff and Brian, who are real guys, they're the Rokan Show Mighty Art Players. It was very scientific on their part, how they wrote it, so that we could finally get our apology. And here it is.
And now this special Cameo message from former Governor Rod Blagojevich.
Hi, this is Rod Blagojevich, and this message is for Illinois. I just got back, and I know that I'm deeply sorry. I feel awful about it, and I hope to make it up to you one day. Good luck to you, and all the best.
There you go. We got our apology. Wasn't exactly how we planned to get our apology, but we got our apology from Rod Blagojevich. You're welcome, Illinois. I think that's as good as it's going to get. That's as good as it's going to get if Donald Trump gets reelected in 2020. There's not really going to be another apology from him. I will say, though, if a Democrat gets elected president of the United States in 2020, you might see Rob Blagojevich apologizing. You might, before it's all said and done. No one's going to throw him back in the clink because he can't do that. He's been commuted. But it's, you know, there's going to be a moment where he might want to acknowledge that there were some things he did that he probably shouldn't have done, said that he probably shouldn't have said. And maybe, you know, if he really wants to make a go at doing something, because the heat is off now. People, I think that Donald Trump has moved on. And I don't think that you're going to see his hope that he was going to be part of the whole MAGA economy. I think might have his window might be shutting. So if that's a way to start with an apology, There you have it. You're welcome. Let's check now the weather, the sports, and the traffic. Here's Kim Gordon. Oh, man. Where's my man Mark McKinnon when I need him? Oh, he's here right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. And you know and you love Mark. He is the creator, executive producer, and co-host of Showtime's The Circus. And they've been out on the campaign trail. They've been all over the world, or all over the United States of America, I should say, trying to figure out who's going to win what. And we talked last week about Joe Biden and the primary in South Carolina that was held on Saturday. And you said, listen, he's going to have to win this thing. But you told me a week ago, Mark McKinnon, that Bernie Sanders was the presumptive leader, the presumptive guy to catch in the Democratic primary. Do you say that today on Monday, the 2nd of March?
Well, Robert Thomas, I know your real pseudonym. Yes, he's been caught. Yeah, the presumptive is no longer presumptive, which is a significant turn of events. And the narrative has changed dramatically. Joe Biden not only won, he blew Bernie Sanders out in a big way, which has really reset the narrative all over the place. I mean, not only that Biden bounced back and that he won in a place that reflects more of America, but Bernie Sanders did poorly. I mean, he did not win. He didn't win black voters. And to win a Democratic primary and be the nominee, you've got to win, the most powerful constituency in the Democratic voter primary, which is black voters. So he's off the mat, and now he's got a couple of big endorsements. And here's what I think is really happening now is that, you know, Biden was an early front runner for a reason, because people liked him and they thought he could win and they thought he could beat Trump. When he stopped winning, people were like, oh, geez, maybe he really can't win, and he's just lost too many steps. That's when Bloomberg boom what took off. And I have a lot of friends in the Democratic Party that were giving him a serious look. But they were giving him a serious look not so much because he was Bloomberg, but because he was not Biden and he had money and resources, and they were thinking that Biden couldn't do it. This is by far the election in which I think voters are thinking more strategically than I've ever seen them. So they were like, uh-oh, Biden can't win. We better go to Bloomberg. Then they saw Bloomberg debate and said, uh-oh, maybe he can't do it. So the fact that Biden has now bounced back and showed some life, I think there's going to be a wholesale movement to him right now, which, of course, is helped by the Klobuchar and Pete endorsements.
Yeah.
So and I think a lot of those people that were going to vote for Bloomberg, you know, in all those Super Tuesday states, I'd say about like half of them at least, they're going to say, hey, you know, Biden's alive, let's go.
You know, I was at an event a couple of weeks ago, a Republican event, because like you, Mark McKinnon, I've sort of ridden the middle of all of this. But you were actually an operative for Republican candidates, George W. Bush, John McCain. I have many friends who are Republican politicians. And I found it very interesting at this event. There were a lot of Republicans at this event that were saying, hey, well, if it's Michael Bloomberg, I might think about that. And now it appears it's not going to be Michael Bloomberg, because Michael Bloomberg, unless he has an incredible showing tomorrow and Super Tuesday, I think he's dead in the water, too. And he's going to turn his attention toward campaign ads against Donald Trump. And probably he'll help Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, who's going to need the money here, because Joe Biden's not been able to raise a ton of money.
Yeah, he just wants to be a factor and wants to be relevant. I mean, I liken Bloomberg. I mean, he's wanted to run for president forever. I know all those guys, and they've been trying to figure out a way to do this forever. And it's like they have this incredible Ferrari in the garage, and they've been tinkering with it. And they have the best mechanics in the world, and they finally rolled it out, and they just, you know, didn't realize that actually Bloomberg can't drive, and he drove right into a fire hydrant at that first debate.
Yeah, it went two blocks before it fell apart.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I think there's even been, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him now, given what, I mean, his rationale to run was to save the, you know, the moderates, because Joe Biden wasn't, it was his view and a lot of other people that maybe Joe couldn't cut it. Now that it looks like he can, Michael Bloomberg has really lost his rationale to be the nominee, and, you know, add on his bad performances. It sort of says that maybe the thing for Biden to do is to drop in line, do what he said, which is spend his money, which Bernie says he doesn't want, but But I'm sure Biden would accept it just in the effort to help beat Donald Trump.
Okay, so let's talk about if you're running the Trump campaign, what do you do here? Do you turn your sights back on Bernie? I mean, on Biden?
Well, I'd say, you know, Donald Trump is tweeting tonight. You know, it's Bernie, they're rigging it again. They're taking it away. They're stealing. It's a coup. You know, it's so clear that, you know, what he really wants is Bernie to be the nominee. And this goes back to, you know, he has always been pretty, his body language has not been very subtle. He worries most about Joe Biden. And for a reason, I think as a general election candidate, Joe Biden is very strong. And, you know, that's why we've had all the Ukraine stuff and all the Hunter Biden stuff. And I think that they were kind of licking their chops because they thought that they'd taken him out, that Bernie Sanders was going to be the nominee. And now maybe that's not the case. But that's why they're fueling this whole Bernie are getting rigged routine right now.
Yeah. Now, I want to play something for you, Mark McKinnon from The Circus, creator, executive producer, co-host of The Circus on Showtime Sunday nights. Best 30 minutes on television about what happened. If you don't care about what's happening in the election and you're like, I don't know, or you care about it, but you're going to wait for the general. If you just want to spend 30 minutes a week, this is the 30 minutes you should spend. And you could do it. You know, listen, it's on Showtime On Demand, too. Just remember that. Now, I will say this to you, Mark McKinnon. That's all well and good. But Joe Biden has actually lost a step. I want to play you two things that happened today, that he said today.
We are. For example.
Oh, that's not one of them. Stand by. Let's do this again. This never happens to you guys. Here we go.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the, go, you know the thing.
The thing.
Yeah, he starts trying to get, you know, he's trying to do a preamble there, and it didn't work out. All right, and then there was.
Look, tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday, and I
wasn't sure.
Oh my God,
which day of the week it was? All right, so do you think he's? I mean, listen. I mean, the president is known for malaprops and finishing sentences in a different place than he started them and all of that. I mean, those two would be very entertaining out on the field. Do the voters really care about that? And do you believe that Donald Trump, in his most aggressive and Trumpy sort of way that he campaigns, it'll be Sleepy Joe and all the rest of the things he's going to say. Can Joe Biden really keep up with that?
Well, there's no question that he's lost more than a step. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that. I mean, I think there are other candidates in the field and not in the field who would have been better general election candidates. But I think he's a lot better than Bernie Sanders in terms of possibility of beating Donald Trump in the general election. And the thing about Biden is that all of that stuff is not a surprise to people. It's baked in. They just said, oh, that's Joe. Now, if it gets really bad and people start to think, oh, there's some cognitive decline going on here right now, well, then there are people who make that same case about the president as well. So, we're going to have a couple of wacky old guys.
Right. 70-year-old.
In the nursing home battling it out for president.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Running into each other with their wheelchairs, all hating on each other.
Yeah, hitting each other with their walkers.
Both complaining that the nurse stole their glasses. Let me ask you this about the Black Swan event, as you described it a couple of weeks ago, of the coronavirus. Where does this play right now, as of today, as of March 2nd, where do you think this thing plays in terms of the next couple of weeks? Because you've got Super Tuesday. Will it affect the vote totals in Super Tuesday? And then not quite as super, but important Tuesday coming up on the 17th, which is when Illinois goes to the polls. I mean, we could have a different environment then, and how does that play out?
I don't know that it plays so much in the primaries. I mean, Michael Bloomberg obviously did the ad, which was a play on his part, which I think was, his best moment of the second debate was talking about the coronavirus. He was the first one to talk about it. And I think people see him as a chief executive that can handle a public health crisis because he has. So I think that was a good play for Bloomberg. But I think at this point, people see it as a, something that's going to likely have, it's going to be a longer term issue with potential longer term effects on the economy. And I think the issue plays much more as a general election issue, particularly if it's not stemmed in a significant factor. So you know, I mean, it may turn out that this thing's kind of wound down by spring, and the impact is limited, and Trump can, you know, at least say that he, you know, that he had an adequate response.
Right, he takes a victory lap on that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, and if he does that, then it kind of things are back to square one.
Yeah. Well, let me.
But it's also got the potential to roll out of control and be very problematic.
Or it can go away in the spring and then come back in the fall, which is what happened in 1917.
Yeah, health officials are saying that could happen.
Yeah, that's what happened with the Spanish flu. So there is you know concern about that, and then that you know play is complete. But that let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're already enough ahead of ourselves. Mark McKinnon, he is the creator, executive producer, and co-host of Showtime's The Circus. Watch it on Sunday nights. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Robert Thomas. I mean, Rokon.
Oh, for God's sake. Chicago's very own WGN. Rokon Show right here on 720 WGN. Can I just mention something about the Dow Jones Industrial Average today? Up almost 1,300 points after taking last week a cumulative loss of over 10, like 12% of its value. Dr. J. John Najarian is joining us right now, and he is a CNBC analyst and was always a monster of some sort. There were option monsters. I don't know what kind of monster you are today, but what say you on this? What do you think happened today that turned the markets around?
Well, I think we were mainly just overdone last week very, very severely. There are some other potential things, you know, that happened. For instance, the South Carolina Biden winning by such a big margin certainly put people back into thinking he's at least in the race, if not, you know, the leader of the race. He's at least in the race for the Democratic Party, which it seemed after some dismal showings he wasn't.
Yeah,
and I think the markets are really not big fans of
Bernie,
Warren, or Bernie.
I think that's safe to say. Yeah,
yes, right. Sir.
So there was also a, and I don't discount that as part of it, but there was also a pretty significant move in terms of the interest rates over the weekend, right?
Well, the coordinated efforts of several central banks. Did help. I mean, for instance, there were central banks that basically in Italy, they were offering tax credits or credits to businesses in an effort to offset some of the, because even though interest rates are so low overseas, in many cases, still negative interest rates, not every company, of course, qualifies to borrow at those rates. And given the dramatic cutbacks that some companies have seen because maybe they're in travel and leisure and maybe some conferences have been canceled and things like that. There are a lot of smaller companies in particular that don't have the same borrowing power of, for instance, an Apple or a Microsoft or any of the big companies, but yet they might employ, you know, 1,000 people.
Right.
It could be a hotel chain throughout Italy that all of a sudden has had mass cancellations and they can't meet their obligations. What do they do? So that's why you saw a lot of these banks really offering up virtually free money in the short term before they even decide to put any restrictions on it. They wanted to make sure that people knew it would flow, and that definitely helped at least sentiment.
All right, Dr. J, let me ask you before we let you go. The coronavirus has this black swan event, as it's being called by some people, is having its impact on the market, right? I mean, that was one of the drivers of last week. This week,
one of the 80% of the driver.
Yes,
at least.
Yeah, exactly, a major driver. Now today, it was just announced that the Houseware Show, which is one of the largest shows that comes into McCormick Place later this month, has been canceled this year. That is a pretty scary event, I think, if you want to look forward to economic development, growth.
Yes, sir. Yep. And it's exactly what you and I were just talking about. I mean, it's not just in Italy. It's not just in China or Singapore or Hong Kong. It's all over that a lot of folks are feeling uncomfortable about traveling. And the more they can make them feel comfortable again about traveling, I don't think this virus is going to be nearly as devastating as some of the headlines have been. I mean, and you look at some of the rebounds in the biggest companies in the world today. Apple, for instance, it was up almost 10% or $25 today. There were a lot of recoveries today that are more in line with the sort of thing you'd expect when cooler heads prevail. But when people want to get a panic started, there are a few better ways than to show people, you know, suffering in a hospital or something like that.
Don't watch the movie
Contagion.
And we
all know.
Yeah,
we all know there's been approximately 3,000 deaths. That's a lot. But in the terms of the global population of nearly 8 billion, I think it's a little overdone, Ro. And so the economy will eventually get its hands around this, but the uncertainty is what took us to where we were last Friday. A little bit of that uncertainty ebbing is why we rebounded 1,300 points today.
John Najarian, CNBC analyst. And what company do you have now, John?
Market Rebellion.
Market Rebellion.
Because that's what the markets are doing. They're rebelling.
Okay, Market Rebellion. That's how you find John Najarian. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right, let's check in now. Let's check with the WGN weather, sports, and traffic. Here's Kim Gordon.
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team weekdays 4 to 10.
That's a good one there, Kev.
Yeah, that's all right.
That's a good one. All right, who here has the iPhone? Anybody? Anybody with the iPhone?
I'm the weirdo with an Android. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Kevin. Lauren, do you have an iPhone?
I do have an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever noticed that your iPhone starts to get slow?
Absolutely. After not just the phones, just about every other device that gets old.
Right, the Apple devices, right?
Yes.
Yes, they go through an update or there's a new product that comes out and all of a sudden your old product's like, this isn't working as well. I wonder if the new update is just designed for the new product and it won't support the old product and what in the hell is going on? Well, turns out now that Apple has been forced to pay $500 million to settle a lawsuit over the slowdown. Aha! I knew it!
But how do you prove it?
They did. They didn't have to.
Well, I mean, how do you prove that you deserve part of this compensation?
Well, Andy Anatko from CNET is going to be here. Tech contributor to Boston Public Radio and beloved tech writer. I said CNET, but it's not. It's Andy Anatko. We love Andy, and we read him right here in the newspaper here in Chicago. Andy, thank you for being with us.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. Actually, I haven't been with the Sun-Times for about a year, but I'm still, part of me is still there in Chicago.
Oh, I hadn't noticed, but you didn't have to bring that up. But okay, go ahead. So, so I want to answer Lauren's question, which is, how do we get in on this?
Well, first of all, yeah, it was a $500 million settlement. It was with the European Union, however, so it's probably not going to, you're going to probably have to get a new passport in order to make it work.
Damn it. Well, can we do it here in the United States? Can we start suing them? Because that's what they're doing, right? I mean, they're throttling us down.
Well, that's what they were doing. Now, here's this. It's actually pretty interesting. This is a classic story of Apple wanting to deliver the best experience for its consumers, quote unquote, but sometimes not really thinking about what the consumers would like. So, if you have here's the problem. If you've got an old phone and your battery needs to be replaced, it's just like starting to die on you. Mm-hmm. The problem is that it's the iPhone has a built-in system that monitors the battery to tell you that, okay, you know what, you only got about an hour's worth of battery life left, so whatever you're doing, wrap it up. But when you've got a really old battery in there, it dies like really quickly. The system doesn't really work that way. You'll just sort of like completely lose your connection completely to just black screen everything. So what Apple tried to do is to say that it's because these phones that were supposed to be lasting, let's say, 15 hours on battery are only lasting 8 hours. What if we throttle down the processor? We'll slow it down, but the user will still get close to whatever they're expecting for battery life. Okay, that's nice, but the problem was they weren't telling the user that they were doing that, and they weren't giving the users the opportunity to say, well, actually, no, I would much rather you run this phone at maximum speed. So they got caught doing that. It got to be a big, big, you know, fool for all. So in addition to this this fine they're supposed to be paying. They also put in a new option in the system settings that say that, hey, if you want, we can slow down the CPU to extend your battery life if you've got problems, but if you don't want that, we won't do that. So it wasn't the case of them trying to trick you into buying a new phone early.
All right, Andy Anatko, tech writer. I'm confused. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. So they're arguing that this is about the battery. This isn't about a planned obsolescence of your iPhone because they've got new iPhones coming out and they want to convert you. And maybe you're two or three generations behind and you're figuring, well, it's slowing down. Everybody else is faster. You get speed envy and then you decide that you got to go do that. It's not that.
No, not at all. The other problem is that obviously the new features they put into the new operating system, they're designed specifically to run with the iPhone 11. But if you're running it on an iPhone 8 or an iPhone 7, it really is not going to perform as well as these new phones can. And Apple they're not slowing down your phone in that case, but they don't really care that you're going to have a less great experience with an older phone.
Because they want you to upgrade.
They figure that you're going to drop in the toilet anyway, so you may as well do it sooner rather than later.
That is probably true. At least the new phone has a better screen, right? If you drop it, it doesn't crack into a million little pieces.
Yeah, that's one thing that they're always working on. They always get better cover glass. Also, the water resistance is much, much better. I think a lot of people are under the misapprehension that just because they say, hey, it's got water resistance down to 3 feet, they think they can take pictures of their kids swimming in pools underwater. Please don't do that because they're not waterproof phones. But they're saying that if you happen to, like, accidentally drop it in the pool and then you grab it and take it back out again, there's a much greater chance that you haven't just made an $800 mistake.
That's very interesting. So that's the 11, though, the iPhone 11, is you can drop it in the water.
Yeah, that's been true for the past two or three generations, I think since the iPhone 8. I could be wrong, but definitely the iPhone 11, definitely the iPhone 10.
Well, I did.
The problem is,
I did, you know, when I accidentally washed my AirPods. That was bad.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of came back. One of them kind of came back, and the other one was waterlogged, and then it eventually came back, and then it went away. So
yeah, that's the problem with it. You think that you got away with it, but then, like, after 3-4 days, suddenly it just dies. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right. Let's talk about the iteration here, the next iteration for Apple. What are you anticipating is going to occur after the 11? Was it a hit? Was it not a hit? I know I've got a friend who's going out and buying an 11 today because she thinks it's going to change her world. And I will it?
I think that if she skipped the iPhone 10, she'd made a good choice. Because I thought that the iPhone 11 really put together a lot of the things that Apple has been trying to figure out with the iPhone 10 over the past couple of different generations, and they put it in a package that costs a lot less. It's a lot more mature. I think the fact of the matter is almost no matter what phone you have, if you wait 2 or 3 years, you're bound to notice a lot of improvements. Speed, obviously, is going to be a huge improvement. Cameras, particularly on an iPhone, it's not that they're doing great stuff because they're not just trying to, hey, look, if we magnify this picture 100 times, you can sort of see that maybe there's more detail. No, now they're moving into directions where all of these situations in which you wouldn't even bother trying to take a picture because you know that, okay, it's a dark bar, there's a lot of red, there's just no point even trying. No, go ahead and take that picture because it's going to be a great picture anyway.
Oh.
So, yeah, the future directions are going to be interesting. I think that they're kind of moving in two directions at once. They're realizing that they need to have more affordable iPhones out there. They're always going to be finding a way to charge you $1,000 for the latest and greatest, but they're also going to try to find a way to get at the people who maybe haven't upgraded an iPhone in 3 or 4 years, and they're very price sensitive, so they're going to try to find a way to sell you a $600 or even a $500 iPhone that's going to make you happy and make Apple's designers happy, but still be affordable. There's a rumor, italicized rumor, that they're going to be introducing one of the sort of lower cost iPhones maybe even in the next month. There's rumors that they're going to be having a media event in Cupertino sometime late this month or early next month. So fingers crossed on that.
Andy Anatko, I always wonder what the temperature is in Cupertino, and I find out just by looking at my phone. All right, I want to ask you right before we go, and I don't want to say her name, but she rhymes with Erie. keeps going off. I mean, in the, like, while I'm on the show or I'm talking to other people or whatever it is, it just, it, that, how much are these smartphones listening to what we're doing?
Practically nothing. I mean, they're, in terms of when people say listening, they think the microphone, like, are they eavesdropping on your conversations? And the fact of the matter is, it really isn't doing that. The amount of processing power that phone would have to burn up to do that when it's not absolutely, you're not absolutely needing to use the microphone, the battery would last like 10 seconds. So don't think about that. If, what you really need to worry about is the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth and the radios in there, because that's how marketing companies figure out where you are, who you're talking to, what you're interested in. That's usually the secret to how they, and they plug these, this data into all kinds of other pieces of data they collected from you elsewhere and then apply an algorithm to it. A lot of people think that, well, gee, I was just talking about this new like fitness program with my friend yesterday, and today I started getting all these ads for the fitness program. They must be listening to the conversation. No, what happened was, if your friend is really into this fitness program, the, because of location tracking, it knew that you were at her house. It knew that this person is really into fitness. You both are have kind of into this fitness stuff, and she started using this fitness program. Maybe you talked about it. So that was one of those reasons why it really seems really, really creepy.
Yeah.
But just be assured that it's very, very creepy, but not for the reasons why you thought it was creepy.
That's creepy anyway. I'm still not. Definitely. I'm completely in the creep zone. Well, that is fascinating because I know they your phone keeps asking you about accepting a Bluetooth. And I'm like, well, there's no Bluetooth device that I know about near me. Oh, no, no. This app needs a Bluetooth. Well, I'm not in my car. I'm not. That's the only place I really use Bluetooth. And then it says, no, we need it anyway. So that's what it's about. It's looking for devices. And it's just going to, you know, Andy, we'll talk about this in the future. But, you know, obviously with the real 5G that's going to pop up and the new technology that's going to be available, they're going to know everything there is to know about us. And we're just basically ones and zeros to them. That's all it is. Andy.
Ones and zeros and dollar signs. Don't forget that.
Right. That's true. Ones and zeros and a dollar sign in front of them. Andy and NotGo, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it. Boston Public Radio. And he's a tech contributor. And you're also in the newspapers, right, still?
I'm just submitting things as I like them to stuff like Fast Company and other kind of websites. If you check out my Twitter, IHNATKO, usually I publicize where I'm writing.
Okay, very good. Andy, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, folks.
Let's check in now with the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Kim Gordon. Rokon Show right here on 720 WGN. Justin Coffin coming your way after 7 o'clock. All right, let's talk about Rob Blagojevich one more time. If you had not heard this earlier in the day, we tricked Rob Blagojevich in the same way that Rob Blagojevich tried to trick the people who ran hospitals into giving him a $50,000 fundraiser in exchange for the state-guaranteed Medicaid payments being made to them back in 2006 and 2007. When he got out of prison, he came back and said he was a political prisoner and everything was just bad and terrible. He went on Anderson Cooper and he misrepresented himself, and Anderson Cooper got so frustrated, he swore at him. He swore at him. So as opposed to being contrite and lovely, he has not been. And as a matter of fact, let's listen. I just want to contrast for you here the difference between Rob Blagojevich when he was governor and on the phone and those tapes that were played, and Rob Blagojevich when he returned here and talked about what an angel he was. Well, I want an apology for the state of Illinois, and we tricked him into one, and we'll play that after we play this.
Yeah, we got the message. Grateful and appreciative, huh? I think a 501c4. Can we get his friend Warren Buffett or some of those guys to help us on something like that?
What, for you?
Yeah. Do they think that I would just appoint Valerie Jarrett for nothing, just to make him happy?
Hey, senators make $169,300.
So more than what I make. 169, huh?
Yeah, 169.3.
But, you know, what about Patty on some, you know, corporate boards? Paid corporate boards right now. Can they help us that way? Treehouse Foods, the one that, what's her name, was on for $65,000. Now, can we get Patty a couple of those? But if they feel like they can do this and not give me anything under just some vague assurances or something, then I'll go Jesse Jr. I mean, the arrogance of these people.
Yeah, what have I gotten for? Oh, the people are going to be mad and the newspapers will follow you.
All right. That's what he said when he was on the overhear by the federal government. And then when he got here, I'm a political prisoner, and this whole thing was trumped up, and I don't know why I was ever in jail and what happened to all these other guys. And Donald Trump, thank you for getting me out of being a political prisoner. That's what he said when he got back here. So I was expecting him, when he came out in front of his house, to say, hey, I'm sorry. Someone was a misunderstanding. Something I didn't mean the way that it sounded on the tape, but that's the way the jury found it. And I'm sorry that I did it. And I shouldn't have tried to hold up the funding to the Children's Hospital. Sure, I should have sold the Barack Obama Senate seat to Jesse Jackson, but fine, but whatever. I'm sorry. He never said he was sorry. So when he announced that he was going to be on Cameo last week, the website that pays celebrities to leave personal messages, personal video messages to you on your phone, we thought this is a good opportunity. But we knew if we sent him a script on Cameo that said, hey, I'm Rob Blagojevich, I'm sorry, he was never going to read it. So we sent him this script.
Hi, this is Rod Blagojevich, and this message is for Jeff. Hey, Jeff, I hope things are getting better in Illinois. I'm not sure. I just got back. I know I missed your birthday last month. Happy belated birthday. Brian evidently may have missed your birthday as well, and he is deeply sorry. He wanted me to tell you that he feels awful about it, and he'll make it up to you one day. The last thing I'd like to say to you, Jeff, is good luck to you, and all the best.
Okay, so what we decided to do to make ourselves feel better. This is like when you break up with somebody and you wish they had said something to you. And so you create a mixtape of and you pretend that your ex sent you the mixtape to make yourself feel better about it. Not that I've ever done that, but this is what we did.
And now this special Cameo message from former Governor Rod Blagojevich.
Hi, this is Rod Blagojevich, and this message is for Illinois. I just got back, and I know that I'm deeply sorry. I feel awful about it, and I hope to make it up to you one day. Good luck to you, and all the best.
Close enough.
Classic radio maneuver. It's a little bit of editing.
Classic Adobe Audition editing right there. There you go. All right. Well, we just hope that maybe when he hears that, it'll make him think, yeah, maybe I should have apologized. Maybe he'll make a real apology.
Or maybe he'll just be like, I totally apologized. Didn't you hear? Yeah, I apologized.
I'll take it. You know what? If he uses this, if he goes, yeah, that's my apology, I'll be very proud that we actually elicited an apology from him. That's the way it's got to go. It's as good as it gets. All right, let's check on the weather, the sports, and the traffic. Here's Kim Gordon. Did I do that all right, Kev? Is that okay?
5 stars.
Thanks. All right, so the story, the local story here today that is a little disconcerting, I mean, other than the coronavirus patients in Arlington Heights, is the fact that the International Houseware Show has pulled its convention from McCormick Place. It's canceled its convention that was coming up in 2 weeks here. And there were supposed to be 51,000 attendees to that event. 51,000 people who attend that come downtown, either come in from out of town or come downtown, and they spend money, they go to the restaurants, they do the things. And it's like, that's not so good.
It's getting a little crazy.
Well, I mean,
you don't shut down a convention during flu season because thousands of people die from the flu every year.
Well, that's true. But, this is new. It's a novel coronavirus. That means it's a new virus. They don't know. We don't know what it actually does. And now they got me completely freaked out. I got my supplies. I got my 12 monkeys suit, as I like to call it. I'm ready to go. And I got to tell you, though, the Housewares show, when I first got out of college, I worked as a writer at a public relations firm. And I got assigned to go to the Housewares show and to represent the IHMA, I think it was called, the International Houseware Manufacturers Association, and that's the group that puts on this convention. And so I was taking TV crews and print reporters and all that around the convention. Just imagine this, a young 22-year-old Rokon escorting these people. And I remember I was so excited because the South Bend television station was there. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take the South Bend television reporters around. Take a look at this. And that was the wackiest trade show ever. I did two trade shows in my life. One was the National Funeral Directors Association. I can't even begin to tell you about how creepy that was. But the Housewares show, it's like everything that you could possibly imagine for your house that you never thought you'd need. But once you see it, you're like, oh, my God, it slices and dices. There were things for you. There were, you know, things that are now fairly regular. I remember there was the heated toilet seat. This was in 1986 or something like that. And it was the heated toilet seat to come out where you'd plug the toilet seat in to the plug in the, you know, you'd replace your toilet seat and then you'd plug this one in to a wall outlet.
That does not seem like a great idea, Ro.
No. It was, as a matter of fact, I was like thinking, what happens when you flush? It's like, there was a spiralizing toothbrush holder. I remember that. That would take the toothbrush and it would go like in a circle and it would to get the water out of the toothbrush, you'd put it in this thing and it would go really fast.
I feel like I need that. I like that.
That's interesting. Now you just have a toothbrush that acts like a sex toy. That's the difference now in the modern era.
It's true.
The salad spinner from 1986 at the International Housewares Show.
Speaking of sex toys.
Yeah. Salad spinner? How about that? It was that, who knew that you needed a thing within a thing that you'd put your lettuce in and it was wet and then you would pull a string and then the thing would go around and around and around and around and around until all the water was off your lettuce. Who knew?
I remember my parents first brought one of those home. It was like a new toy for all of us. We're like, cool. Can we spin the salad?
Oh man, there were alarm clocks that did all kinds of weird things. There's an alarm clock that lit up to make sure that you were, if your room was dark, it sent like a beam of light to the ceiling to make sure that you, if just the alarm itself wasn't good enough. That's the kind of stuff you'd have at the Housewares show. And now the Housewares show is not going to be here this year, and I find that to be incredibly disconcerting. So I really hope, because think about if you stop and you think about what the actual economic impact of that is, and what, who knows what's coming up next after that? There's a lot of stuff. This, you know, Chicago. I think, what is it with Rahm Emanuel? I think the last year was 47 million tourists a year. And you know, we like tourists in this town. You know why we like tourists? Because they come in, they spend their money, we rip them off with our taxes, especially the hotel tax, which is ridiculous. You're getting a hotel room for $100 a night, and then you find out that it's really $135 a night when you're checking out because of the hotel tax. We take them on that, we take them on the food tax, we take them on everything else. The downtown cab tax, all the things that we get them on. And then they don't use our services. They're not asking for a garbage can. They're not asking for snow removal. Right? That's 47 million individuals that come into this town that spend their money and leave. And that's what we want. And now if all of a sudden this is going to stop, I mean, we think we have enough trouble here. If this economy is going to slow up, God knows. I hate to be dire about it, but I would prefer if they came in with the salad spinners and the, you know, the toothbrush dryer and the toilet seat that plugs into the wall. I would prefer if they would come in here and do that. We won't, you know, and then listen, they're gonna get coronavirus at home too. In 2 weeks it's gonna be everywhere. Or it's gonna be nowhere. It's gonna be either, and people are gonna figure out that it is survivable in most cases, as we've talked to all the medical professionals today, and these two on the show who are like, I don't care if you die, Ro.
Well, I don't care if you die. I mean, you had a good run.
I mean, we're going to be fine. That's all I'm hearing from you two. Is
you would hear it that way.
That's what I'm hearing.
I mean, it's so overblown. Everyone's freaking out. It's like, relax.
Did you buy those ear filters at the home show years ago, Ro?
The air filters? Ear filters?
Your ear filters, because, you know, you apparently hear things differently.
No, I did not. I did not. No, but that is what I heard, though. I did hear the two of you saying, go ahead. Go ahead, drop dead. You're over 50. You have it coming.
No, we didn't mean it that way.
Yeah, it'll be a job available.
No,
yes, I think she did. So I just wish, I just wish you'd be a little bit more empathetic toward me. That's all I'm saying. All right, let's do this. We're going to stop down, and then I'm going to get even with Justin Kaufman for something he did to me a couple of months ago. I'm going to make him come in and tell me about a movie, because he made me come in and tell him about a movie. That's coming your way. But first, let's get a... let's do this, actually. We're not doing anything. We're doing this.
Chicago's very own WGN Radio Chicago.
It's the Ro Khan Show. Justin Kaufman has stepped in the studio.
Hey,
he's going to hold forth here starting at 7 o'clock. All right.
You
made me, a couple of months ago, you made me and Richard Roper come in, because
mm-hmm.
we're gigantic movie experts now that we have a podcast about it. Right. He's really the expert, but I'm pretty funny on the podcast.
Is that on your business card?
Yeah, that's what it's
funny.
Yeah,
I'm pretty funny.
And I edited it. It's really good. Anyway, the point is that... You made us come in and talk about movies and defend Chicago movies.
Yeah.
I'm now going to make you do the same thing.
All right.
I want you to tell me the best pandemic movie of all time.
Oh, well, World War Z would be mine.
Oh, wow.
World War Z is one of my favorite movies. It's the Brad Pitt vehicle. And Brad Pitt was asked, I think, on the carpet. Someone said, are we going to get a World War Z 2? And he's like, maybe.
That sounds like Brad Pitt.
Yeah, that was very Brad Pitt. That movie is zombie-like. That's the one where it gets really... That's the one...
But is it pandemic, though? Is it a disease?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Come on, man.
Yeah. Okay.
It is. It's real deal where he's got...
But wasn't he also in 12 Monkeys, too?
He was, yeah.
He loves the pandemic movie.
This is the kind of thing where he had to put magazines on his forearms, so if the zombies, you know, if they bite you... then you become a zombie as well.
Oh.
So he had put magazines and taped them with duct tape around his forearms, so when he was fighting them off, they couldn't bite him. It was great. Great zombie movie.
To me...
It's a classic, man. You should see that one.
Okay, that's a classic. To me, the classic, the best of its breed until Contagion, which I think is the best. Steven Soderbergh, it's excellent.
Yeah,
but don't watch it. I watch it Friday night. Total mistake.
It's
Do
too
not
real.
Watch. Oh yeah, it's totally real. I mean, they're using all the same, you know, words, bats and pigs and coronavirus.
I want to make that clear. World War Z is not real.
Yeah. No, this one. No. This is like totally real. And it takes place in Chicago, even though they say it's Chicago. It's Minneapolis. They say it's Minneapolis, but it's really Chicago. Andromeda Strain.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Michael Crichton. It was a Michael Crichton book. Then he directed it as a movie. Michael Crichton had, before ER and all the other stuff that he was doing, he had an amazing film career. And he was like 24 years old when he was writing all this genius stuff. He was like one of those ahead of his time dudes. And Andromeda Strain is great because it's not only is it the you got a virus, you got, you know, people are like melting or whatever it is, but you also have the government screwing it up and then becoming totalitarian. Yes.
Well, it sounds like we should get a film fest together for the quarantine.
Right, exactly. Like, you know how they do that, like around Christmas.
Right.
Like they'll put together, like Netflix will put together. Here's your holiday movies.
I'll send an invite to everybody when the quarantine happens. Y'all come over to my house. I defeated the whole purpose of the quarantine.
Here's all the fine films when you were having a pandemic.
Right. Eating your canned goods and drinking your distilled water while you're watching Contagion.
12 Monkeys is quite good, and I like Outbreak too. Outbreak is pretty good.
Watch World War Z. That's a good one. It's pathogen. It's the same idea, but it's zombies.
Okay. What do you got coming up? You got 5 seconds to tell me.
A whole show. It's going to be a great show. It's going to be really good.
I'm sure there's more to it than that. All right.